Before the show starts, I'm just going to show you a couple of videos that relate to the show, that relate to things that we discuss on the show. The first and most concerning is the arrest of Alfred Schaefer in Dresden. All that happened was that Alfred went off to go and commemorate the day of the genocide of the German civilians, I might add, in Dresden. So you would think that in any normal country, that if you want to pay your respects to the dead, to those who died before, that nobody would have a problem with it. Well, there is a problem. And this is Germany after the so-called Allies, basically the hired guns of the Jews from Britain, America, Russia, etc., smashed Germany and forced their culture and their laws on Germany against the wishes of the Germans. So, for some reason that I don't know, the police were actually gunning for Alfred Schaefer. It turns out that he'd just left home to head off to Dresden and the cops had arrived at his house. So when they missed him at his house, they later cornered him in Dresden. And that's the film footage that you're about to see. All these Germans going to commemorate their dead, going to remember those who came before them, which is what should be happening in all countries. We should remember our ancestors. We should be remembering our dead. But perhaps they don't like Alfred Schaefer there. Maybe they don't like the idea that he might say something. Anyway, whatever the hell it is, they then arrest him. So this is the film footage that a friend of his took. And in this video, in this show, you will hear Alfred explaining the crazy lunatic stuff related to this needless arrest of a normal civilian. But I think that there must be something that bothers them about Alfred. Maybe Alfred has some effect and they really don't want Alfred speaking to other Germans or doing anything. I think that's really what this boils down to. So if you can't even talk to your own people, I mean, that's crazy. That's just yet another layer of censorship. But again, I must state and reiterate that Germans did not create this society. Germans did not create these laws of their own accord. These things were forced on them at gunpoint. So they live in a country that's called Germany, but it's not really German. Jews have decided what German society is going to be like. So now, German police have to go and arrest other Germans, not because they committed a crime, not because they robbed anyone, not because they beat up anyone, not because they stole anything, but because the thought crimes are the problem. Jews are the greatest social engineers on the planet. And Jews have been socially engineering all of us. And all of us are not allowed to be ourselves. And Germans are at the top of the list. So here's the film footage.
verboten. Ausgenommen von dieser Regelung ist das Mitführen von Behältnissen für Alkohol oder Heißgetränke, zum Beispiel handelsübliche Gerichtsstand. Des Weiteren wird das Mitführen von Biotechnologien der Einsatz starker Durchschnitte, sogenannte Lebensmittel, und zusätzlich
aber das ist mein, der kann nicht nach Hause kommen ohne mich.
Nee, wir sind alle nicht aus München.
Aber das ist doch wichtig, dass das einzelne Wort zu hören ist.
Nee, das einzelne Wort ist eine Privatsache. Sie,
Alfred hat mir das erlaubt.
Naja.
Und Sie sind eine Person öffentlichen
Rechts. Das ist richtig, aber ich weiß ja nicht, dass Sie einen kennen oder so.
Doch, wir kennen es persönlich.
Now I have quite a heck of a story for you, and it relates to South Africa and electricity. And boy oh boy, are there sparks flying between the white guy who was running the electricity company Eskom and the government. And I must tell you that this week I've had the worst power outages that I've ever experienced in South Africa. On Monday, I'm not sure exactly how long the power was out, but it was at least off for at least 8 hours. And my internet has been dying because of the electricity. I'm not going to go into the details of why that is, but on Monday, I didn't have internet for 14 hours. And I had to start making use of my backup internet plan urgently. And this whole week I've actually been working mostly off my backup internet plan. And for the first time in a very long time, I've actually even switched on my generator, because my solar power can handle small loads of my computers and the things that are important to me. But for other things, I need the generator for certain things. So this week has been quite crazy, electricity-wise. In fact, at the time that I'm making this video, which is on Friday the 24th of February, I haven't had power for almost 12 hours. No electricity and no internet for almost 12 hours, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that this is going to change in any way at all. And the exact reason why I'm sitting without power today, and the whole area that I live in is without power today, might even in part be related to the videos that you're about to see. These are a bunch of short videos, and they are about the white guy who was running Eskom. So let me just explain. South Africa's power supply was always driven by a parastatal company called Eskom. It is one of a number of companies created by the whites in the time of apartheid. And among those companies, among those parastatals, was SABC, which was all radio and TV. There was Transnet, which was all the railways. There is Iscor, which is steel. There was the post office. There was Arms Corps, which was manufacturing of weaponry. But Eskom was the one that dealt with electricity. And our electricity was fine under white rule. But since 2008, which was after 14 years of black rule, since 2008 we've started having electricity problems and the need for rolling blackouts. And then for a while, for a couple of years, it seemed to be better, and then it came back, and it's been back with an absolute vengeance since 2020. So before this guy, there was a black guy, and the black guy was running things, and things were getting worse. So in one of the rare instances where they actually appoint a white guy, they went and grabbed this De Reiter guy, and he became the head of Eskom. Oh, and another parastatal is SAA, which is the airline. The airline has been bankrupt several times already. Anyway, they got hold of this white guy who was a businessman, and he was sure he could fix everything. And he's been running the Eskom setup for a few years now, and all of a sudden he's decided to resign. And in the video that you'll see, he even tells you he's not resigning because he's got another job. He doesn't have another job. He's just decided to resign. So that should already indicate that he's resigning because he's sick and tired of what he's doing. And he's having less and less success, and things are getting worse. So De Reiter has been running Eskom for a couple of years now, and now he's calling it quits. A very similar thing happened with the South African Post Office. It had been bankrupt, and then along came another white guy who also said, no, I can fix this thing, I can fix it. And the thing that I'm about to describe to you people is a thing that I've said many, many times before. And people outside Africa might not understand this, but what I'm telling you is the absolute truth. And you're going to see this for yourself. Is that there comes a point where you cannot work with these people anymore. And you cannot work inside this system anymore. The blacks are in charge, the blacks are making all the rules, the blacks make the laws, they control all kinds of things, they've got lots and lots of power, they have total power. But there comes a point where no matter what you do, this system cannot be made to work. There are things that whites have seen and said and whites have warned about, and whites say we must do it this way, we must do it that way, and the blacks say no. And there comes a point where the things that the blacks don't allow us to do then actually make the whole situation totally impossible. So this businessman who was in charge of the post office, he dived in there and he was sure he could fix everything. Because whites are confident and whites know what they're doing. Anyway, this liberal businessman was totally sure he could solve the problem. And after a while, I can't remember how long it was, but after some time, a year or 2 years or whatever, this white guy called it quits. He couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't handle the post office. So he became a failure and he quit. So The guy who tried to save the post office, the white guy who tried to save the post office, he called it a day, man, because he reached a point where he couldn't make this thing function. And now we've got Der Reiter, who's also come in, and he's also confident. And these guys, guys like Der Reiter and the other guy, these are liberal whites, and these liberal whites are sure that they can make it work, that liberalism can make it work, that if you just work with these blacks nicely, that this is going to work. Well, you're about to see the incredible fiasco that has just taken place regarding Der Reiter. It is one hell of a story. And this thing is going to get crazy. This parting of ways between Der Reiter and Eskom and the government, this thing is going to become quite a hell of a story. In fact, Der Reiter has said he is going to be leaving the country because he's afraid for his life. He's actually scared somebody might kill him. But this is what must happen with these ass-kissing liberals who don't want to listen and learn from history. So they have to go through this, and you're going to hear what happened, and you'll see this thing is going to get nasty. These blacks might even want to put him in jail. So let me tell you what videos you're going to see. They are short, and all the videos combined come to 11 and a half minutes. The first video is quite a laid-back one, where Der Reiter comes and he says he's resigning, and people are wonderful, and everything is good, and he's decided he's going to resign, and he's doing it for some junk reason. It's like he says, oh no, things are going to get better. The talk is that they're going to bring in companies to also start doing the electricity. Anyway, it starts out nice and sweet in this discussion where he says he's resigning, his contract requires that he works a notice period of 2 months, etc. Then, the next two videos are very short, but Der Reiter is interviewed by a white woman who is a journalist, and these are just two short pieces out of the 26-minute interview. But these short pieces were doing the rounds in South Africa like crazy. They were going viral in South Africa because in this interview, he started saying things. He started saying, oh, well, there are crime syndicates in Mpumalanga, which is in the north of South Africa. And these crime syndicates are assassinating people. And then he goes on and tells you all the other stories of these nasty things that these blacks are doing. How you can pay somebody to go and break. How you can pay somebody to go and break a piece of equipment at Eskom, and then the company that fixes that can basically pay someone to break something so that they can get business. And boy oh boy, once he's done that interview and he's said those things and he talks about all the corruption, oh boy, that's when everything went crazy. So the next thing you'll see is a news report where the moment that the blacks in charge hear about this, they tell him to get out immediately. They tell him he must get out immediately, no more notice period. Then the next thing is this gets into the mass media and they start talking about this, and now the blacks all over, blacks in high positions in government, COSATU, the Communist Trade Union, and all these others, the blacks pretend that they don't know anything about the corruption that's going on. The blacks in all these high positions are like, corruption? Corruption? What corruption is there? There's no corruption here in South Africa. Well, that's how this game plays itself out. So in South Africa, there is corruption. And sometimes, some of it even manages to make it into the news. Like with COVID, there were government ministers that were breaking the very rules that they'd made for us. There were government ministers who were busy buying and selling liquor and engaging in all kinds of businesses that were illegal at the time due to COVID's rules that they had made. So what it boils down to is the people at the top who make the rules, they can also break the rules, and they do. And they break the rules, and they say all kinds of things, but they hide it from the rest of the world. So they do all kinds of silly things and criminal things, and then they pretend that they are innocent. They know nothing about this. They never heard anything about this. So that is what then happens. And then these blacks come at him. The guy who is the head of COSATU, his name is Vavi. I've watched him over many years. He's a hardcore communist. And Vavi says, well, if this guy knows about corruption, we're going to take him to court. So they're going to take him to court because he didn't open his mouth. But the truth of the matter is, the way these things really work is that when you're in these positions, you got to play along with your bosses. And if your bosses are naughty and they tell you to shut up and ignore this and keep quiet about that, etc., then you got to do it. So what the writer has now done is he's now suddenly started talking about stuff that affects his bosses. But they make the law and they got the power. And you will see how all these high-ranking blacks, government ministers, etc., now they're all outraged. Corruption, corruption? Come and prove it. Come and prove it, they say. And how dare you say that? We're going to take you to court. Oh, man, I want to tell you, De Reiter is now in trouble. Now De Reiter has opened a freaking can of worms. He's opened a can of worms for himself. He's going to have to jump around. And I have no doubt that what he's saying is true. I have no doubt about it. When I was in the corporate world, I also had some kinds of problems where you see how the system works and then later you start saying, hey, you know, that manager did this or that. And then the same kind of storm erupts. But those storms, when I was in the corporate world, those are small storms, tiny storms in a teacup. That's nothing compared to what Der Reiter has just done. And he must be careful. So the blacks are going after him now. And he's caught between a rock and a hard place. He either has to provide evidence of stuff, which the blacks very likely will try to cover up. So if he comes and he claims something, and they manage to cover it up, then he's going to look like a liar. Then they're going to nail him for lying and for defaming them. If he should somehow manage to get proof and enough proof and be able to stand his ground, well, then he's a very lucky guy. But I can tell you, all these blacks are gathering together as Team Black. Team Black Communist, and Team Black Communist is gonna fight back like crazy. He's not allowed to say, oh, there's corruption and there's incompetence. Oh boy, oh boy, De Reiter has opened a can of worms for himself. He is a very high profile guy, so we'll have to see how this goes, if he's lucky enough to get away with this. But I think that he's in for quite a wild ride. He's in for the wildest ride of his life. You're going to see what these blacks can do. They can make the law. They can arrest you. They can do all kinds of stuff. I think he's going to have quite a time ahead. So anyway, here is the 11-minute video. And watch the action. Der Reiter has kicked off a storm. A storm so big, we've not seen anything like this in quite a time. Of course, it's good that he's come and told the truth. But the fact is that he also was part of the game for a time. And he kept his mouth shut. So now he's trying to turn on them. Oh, man. He's in a hot spot here. So this year, I must tell you, is going to be electricity, electricity, electricity. We've got serious problems. Serious problems. And then this kind of thing will add to the storm. It's going to get very interesting. So here are the videos.
I want to keep my remarks very brief today. First of all, let me start off by saying that it's been an absolute honor and a privilege to lead an organization of the size and importance of Eskom. I'm really gratified that I was entrusted with this opportunity. I'm obviously disappointed that I could not achieve all of the objectives that I had set myself. I think the circumstances surrounding Eskom are well known. The operational challenges, the financial challenges, the challenges surrounding societal matters, including crime and corruption, as well as some of the issues that we have experienced in delivering the unbundling of Eskom and making sure that we can achieve our objectives in that regard. With that said, as the chairman said, I am in a position where I'm also dependent on the support of the broader political economy, and that support is absolutely critical to enabling the success of Eskom going forward. Given recent media reports, I'm unfortunately currently in a position where I do not regard that position as being tenable, and I have accordingly decided to step back, afford the shareholder and the board the opportunity to appoint a candidate to the position of Group Chief Executive who may be better suited, may be better equipped for the strategic and operational objectives at hand, and I have therefore decided to step back. However, I'm not abandoning ship. I intend to stay on until the end of March. My notice period, as per my contract, is 2 months, so I am staying on beyond that with the idea that I will be able to ensure that there is a handover to my successor, whoever that might be. I wish to express a particular word of thanks to the employees of Eskom. There are many honest, hardworking employees in this organization. In fact, the vast majority of our employees fall into that category. I have had the privilege of working with amazingly competent and dedicated people who go above and beyond the call of duty on a daily basis to keep the supply of electricity as uninterrupted as possible, given the constraints that we face from a generation capacity perspective, which of course doesn't fall within Eskom's remit to be able to resolve. And I can give the assurance to the media, but also to the public at large, that the people of Eskom are committed, dedicated to working as hard as they have been in order to drive the momentum of this business forward. I can also thank the many people who have reached out to me with personal messages of support and understanding and encouragement. I intend to take some time off, spend time with my family, who have not seen much of me for the past 3 years, and who, after all, are very important to me personally, and with whom I'd like to spend some more time. There's nothing in the pipeline, so there's no job offers in the offing. That's not the reason why I've tendered my resignation. This is purely to enable the organization to resume a path to which it can then resume the key role that it plays in making sure that it can supply South Africa with electricity, but more importantly, enable the growth of South Africa as we make our transition to a more liberalized electricity market in the country. With those few remarks, Chair, I'm going to pause. And
we know of at least four organized crime cartels operating in Mpumalanga, in Eskom. Some of them also have interests in Transnet, and we see that in our inability to rail coal to Majuba Power Station, for example, where we don't have enough electric locomotives because the overhead lines are stolen, and Transnet doesn't have enough diesel locomotives because these are being tampered with and otherwise disabled. So these four cartels are quite sophisticated as far as we can tell. They are well organized. It's interesting that they've adopted the language of the mafia. So people are called soldiers, and they have a hit squad, allegedly between 60 and 70 highly trained, well-armed people. And people get assassinated in Mpumalanga. I think the media maybe has become very used to these reports, so it doesn't receive much airtime anymore, but every week there's pretty much an assassination. It's deeply entrenched, and it is highly organized. Now, also understand that there are many hangers-on. So if there is a contractor who gets paid a pittance to do cleaning or whatever the case may be, to pay someone like that 5,000 rand to walk past a gearbox with a screwdriver and just with a sharp jab knock out the sight glass where you can check the oil level. The gearbox oil then drains and the gearbox fails, and somebody who's got a maintenance contract is then called out. But the individual who committed the act of sabotage, because that's what it is not the kingpin. That's just one of the runners.
Soldier, yeah.
And that is where I think we have a systemic problem, is that it's really so simple. And you can't post a policeman over every employee's shoulder to watch what they're doing. At certain point in time, you have to trust them.
In breaking news this hour, outgoing CEO André de Reiter has left Eskom with immediate effect. The power utility says, following a special board meeting today, the board and the chief executive have agreed to curtail his notice period to 28 February.
Convening of a special board meeting on the 22nd of February 2023, the Eskom board and group chief executive André de Reiter have reached mutual agreement to curtail his notice period to the 28th of February 2023. The board further resolved that Mr. de Reiter will not be required to serve the balance of his notice period, but that he will be released from his position with immediate effect. The acting GCE arrangements are being finalized with the shareholder minister and will be communicated shortly.
It's the stuff of fictional crime novels or political thrillers, but in South Africa's case, it's all too real. The fallout after André de Reiter's departure from Eskom has people talking, politicians calling for him to provide evidence of his allegations and pending criminal charges. ENCA senior reporter Aviwe Mtila made sense of it all and filed this report.
André de Reiter leaves Eskom with immediate effect. This follows an explosive interview on ENCA that detailed the alleged rot between the state-owned entity and the African National Congress. The outgoing CEO says when he reported this to a senior government minister, he was told to let people eat.
From the SAFCO perspective, what we thought we must do is to go and lay charges against de Reiter himself, using Section 34 of PRECA, or the Prevention of Corruption Act, to say that that section enjoins every South African who is aware of acts of corruption to immediately report that to the authorities. We're going to have to use that against him so that he is forced to reveal to South Africa as to who are the ministers. And if the minister would have said, go soft, we must eat a little, allow people to eat a little, wow, that will explain why in part we are in darkness as we speak in South Africa.
We also reject these unfortunate, irresponsible and baseless claims of alleged political meddling and corruption at the embattled power utility. He is now trying to shift the blame from his own shortcomings to other people. We must ask why he is only raising this allegation when he leaves Eskom. If Mr. De Reiter has any evidence to the contrary, he is duty bound to present it. He was the CEO after all. Don't make flimsy allegations about involvement of people in corruption when you were at the helm. You were the CEO. Expose corruption. We challenge you.
The latest development at Eskom has infuriated many South Africans.
The people who caused the loss and everything, is they're getting off scot-free, and the taxpayers got to make up for it. I'm totally unacceptable. Same with SAA, you know. These people are still sitting there that caused all the problem, and they make it go away.
I do think that the CEO has to say something about it, because, I mean, that he has information, and that information could be valuable for, you know, for further investigations.
The board itself needs to deliberate on this issue. After deliberation, they therefore then have to go to Parliament and account on these issues.
All of these allegations happen at a time when the power utility is unable to keep the lights on, with government coming in to relieve it of some 254 billion rands worth of debt. Aviwe Mdila, Johannesburg.
Now for the final video before the show starts. It's almost 6 minutes long. In our discussions in the show, we discuss competence and how important is competence. And I make the point that you can hide incompetence when you're a manager. In management positions, it's easier to hide incompetence. And if everybody gets used to low standards, then eventually you don't even realize there's incompetence in a job. And I try to explain that whites everywhere have got standards, and those standards are there for a reason. Those standards are not just because people feel like doing something and they just suck the standard out of their thumb just for fun or just because they want to preserve white privilege. They actually have standards, and those standards are there for an actual reason. So here is a short video from Fox News where Tucker Carlson dares to actually go down this path, and he dares to actually talk about the need for competence in certain kinds of jobs, and that if you carry on giving people jobs just for the sake of diversity, and you'll see what the job is, then lots more people are still going to die. And that's what you're about to see. That white people have got standards, and we don't have the standards just because we feel like we want to give ourselves privilege. We have standards because it's actually necessary.
Conrad Aska was born in 1974 in the tiny Caribbean nation of Antigua, and by every account, he was an outstanding person. Conrad was the leader of the family, said his brother. We all looked up to him. Aska was certainly a man of deep religious faith, and we know that because his final words in the second before his death were, quote, "Lord, you now have my soul," imagine saying that as your final sentence. But his death is a scandal. The reason he died is a scandal, and many in the aviation industry know about it, but it is never mentioned in public. So we thought we would tell you because there are lessons in his death for all of us who travel commercially. In February of 2019, Asko was the first officer piloting an Amazon Prime cargo jet for a contractor called Atlas Air. They were flying a Boeing 767. As it approached Houston Airport, Asko assumed full control of the plane. Seconds later, while attempting to apply the speed brakes to land, Asko accidentally pressed a switch that put the plane into go-around mode, and that gave the plane an unexpected jolt of thrust. In response to this unexpected jolt, Asko panicked. Instead of checking his instruments to figure out what was going on, he pushed down hard on the control yoke. He pushed as hard as he could, and then the plane nosedived through the clouds and right into the water. The plane was obliterated on impact. It killed him, his co-pilot, and another pilot who was just hitching a ride. So it was obvious from those facts alone that Conrad Aska, decent man though he was, should not have been in control of an airplane. And his personnel records confirm that strongly. Before he started flying 767s for Amazon and Atlas Air, he had been a pilot for 7 different airlines, including Mesa Airlines. Several instructors at Mesa reported that Asko was often overwhelmed in the cockpit, as he was on the day he died. One pilot later told the NTSB that in emergencies, Asko, quote, became extremely anxious and would start pushing a lot of buttons without thinking about what he was pushing, just to be doing something. To be clear, for a pilot, that can be deadly, and it was. Atlas Air says it was not aware of any of this when it hired Asko. But once he arrived at Atlas Air, Asko was so deficient in the simulator that all pilots have to train on that the company had to restart simulator training just for him. All of his other classmates had graduated. Predictably, in its final report into the Atlas Air crash, the NTSB cited as a cause of the deadly crash the, quote, systemic deficiencies in the aviation industry's selection and performance measurement practices, which failed to address the first officer's aptitude-related deficiencies, and maladaptive stress response. By the way, those are things that all airlines and the military screen for and have since aviation began. And ask his family, who lost their son and husband and brother, knew that. And so they have gone on to file several lawsuits against Atlas Air and Amazon for gross negligence, specifically for putting this man in the cockpit despite his obvious inability to fly an airplane. So why was he flying an airplane? Well, in his specific case, we do not have a definitive answer, but it seems pretty obvious. Airlines like Atlas Air, in fact, all the airlines, are doing their best to hire and retrain pilots on the basis of irrelevant criteria like their appearance. And your appearance to restate has nothing to do with your ability to fly an airplane or perform heart surgery or do anything. It's immaterial. But on their websites, both Amazon and Atlas Air explained that, quote, diversity is paramount in everything they do. Here's from the Atlas Air website, quote, we leverage diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, as a business strategy and driver of innovation. We are guided by DEI philosophy. Oh, yes, well, apparently you are. And look at the results. Amazon, of course, says the same thing. This is not an outlier. This is not just happening at Atlas Air. This is happening at every major carrier in the United States. Safety concerns ignored in favor of something called equity. Hiring by appearance, not by ability. This is insane. And in this case, it killed 3 people. United Airlines has promised that 50% of their new trainees will be, quote, women and minorities. Right. Not the best pilots, but people who look a certain way. Well, as we told you, in December, a United Boeing 777 bound for San Francisco came within seconds of hitting the ocean. It just dropped out of the sky. And the pilots, who apparently were not properly trained or hired for the wrong reasons on the basis of irrelevant criteria, were sent back to training. Thankfully, the hundreds of people on that plane survived. But this kind of thing is happening across the industry. Talk to anyone who works there. Talk to any working pilot right now. The airlines are in a mad scramble to meet equity targets. meaning they are pushing safety aside in favor of ideology. And people will die. People have died. It's going to happen again. This should stop.
Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. From Tucker Carlson Tonight.
Hello, and welcome to Team White. Today, there are four of us spanning three continents. We have Alfred and Monica Schaefer representing Europe and West Coast of North America, and me in the heartland of North America, and of course, Jan in splendiferous South Africa. How you doing, Jan?
I'm fine, thanks, Alex. How are you?
That's great. Incredible. How are you other two doing?
Really good. I'm representing Canada.
All right.
Yeah.
We're doing this monthly show. We're gonna come at you once a month as best we can. And let's see, what do we want to talk about today? I'm gonna end up talking about St. Louis and some other stuff that has me really agitated. But I think we want to start by talking about maybe Dresden and what's going on there in Europe.
Yeah.
So we'll let Alfred take the stage and what do white people need to know about Dresden and Germany right now?
Absolutely. You know, the definition of a Holocaust is a burnt offering. And Dresden was actually the real Holocaust. Also Hamburg and a bunch of other cities too that were firebombed. But Dresden was firebombed on I think it was the 13th of February, 1945, in multiple waves to really make maximum death toll. And the stated military goal was to baste 900,000 Germans, because Dresden was jam-packed with refugees, real refugees, not like the refugees what they call refugees today. Those were real refugees who were fleeing the raping, murdering Bolshevik hordes from the east. They were all concentrated in Dresden, and then the Jew-controlled British and American forces had as an agenda, as a goal, they wanted to, like I said, baste 900,000. They did end up killing something around 500,000. Some people say it was more. Some people say it was a bit less, but it couldn't have been much less because it was horrific. Anyway, I wanted to go there for the commemoration, a memorial kind of thing. There's the peaceful march kind of thing to commemorate the dead. And on Thursday, the 9th of February, I left at 5 a.m. to catch a train to meet somebody in Munich and to go on to Dresden. And as we were going there on the train, my buddy who I was traveling with got a call, and it was my wife calling because my telephone was off. And she had been visited by two plainclothes policemen who were looking for me. They wanted to hand me a sort of a order kind of thing, that if I, in the next 4 days, I was supposed to register at the police station two times a day. And if I don't, for every time I miss going there on my two visits per day over those 4 days, I would be fined 1,000 euros kind of thing. In other words, they wanted to bind me down to keep me from going there, but I was already gone. So that was it. Anyway, we get to Dresden and we're keeping our eye out for the cops and so forth. And they didn't seem to have, spotted me or anything yet. And then on Saturday, which was 2 days later, on the way to the main train station from the vacation home where we were staying, there was a lot of nervousness amongst our people. We were a small group there because there was huge amounts of numbers of Antifa, you know, the noisy communist Antifas.
Communists,
yeah. They're paid, they're bussed in, you know, they're paid to go there and raise hell. And so there was some nervousness of whether we should get off before or after the main train station and walk there and so forth. But no, we decided in the end we'll get off at the main train station, which was actually good because there was whole divisions of police there, heavily armed police there, and they were actually kind of like they protected us from the Antifa, keep them away from us, because the Antifas are really getting more brazen these days, and they like to come up from behind with like a metal bar or something and smash you over the head and kill you if they can. That's how crazy they are. I mean, these are communists. But anyway, then as we were standing in front of the train station, my buddies that I was with, they noticed that these policemen seemed to keep looking over towards me. They'd be looking at their mobile phones, and then they'd be phoning with somebody, and then they'd be looking at me again and looking at their phones. So they told me, you know, they're saying, oh, they seem to be having in their focus. So I tried to act, try to look down, keep my collar up kind of thing, and look a little bit, not too obvious kind of thing. But then a couple of them came over to me, and then that's the video I'd sent Jan to where they arrested me. Then they started talking to me because one of our guys was filming this then from his little handy mobile phone, and then I realized there's no point in resisting this. They will use force if need be. So I did end up going with them to the police station. But then it was so amazing because they showed me that these orders where I'm going to be penalized for, if I don't go to the police station twice a day and all that kind of stuff. And it says, well, this is the first time I've seen that. So, you could forget that. And then they says, I'm not allowed to talk to anybody on the right. And the one detective cop was standing, sitting to the right of me. So I says, oh, so I'm not allowed to talk to you because you're on my right. And then this woman who was kind of an inspector or whatever, she was on my left and says, and she's an extreme left, so I can't talk to her either. Now, if I want to talk to you, I guess I'll always have to face you. I mean, I do not ever buy into any of this left or right or striped or polka dotted. I told them when I was ordered not to talk to anybody on the right, I says, I want a list of names and pictures so I know who they're talking about, because I cannot. How am I supposed to know who I'm not allowed to talk to? I don't tell them who they're not allowed to talk to. I mean, every single human being has the right to say anything he wants if it's the truth. I mean, if you lie, then you're a liar. But every single person on this planet has the right to speak the truth, and nobody can disallow that. Anyway, in the end, they I sort of feared I was going to end up in a prison cell and so forth. But then I realized they wanted to have me on a train leaving Dresden, and for some reason they thought they wanted to put me to go to Ingolstadt, which is I don't know why. And I said, why do you want me to go to Ingolstadt? I don't come from there. And they realized they had made a mistake. In the end, anyway, they said, okay, if I leave Dresden, they will escort me to the train station. And I said, but there's no way I'm going without going to our vacation house where I got my stuff. I have to be able to pick that stuff up. And they did agree to that. And they did then, and when all was said and done. Oh, yeah. But before leaving the police department there, I had to sign three forms, and also I was able to make a lot of statements that are extremely useful for us. And one of my statements was that it is grotesque to define the commemoration, the remembrance of our own butchered, massacred ancestors as hatred or extremist or whatever you want to call it. That is a fundamental right that we all have. Now, if somebody's going to punish you for laying flowers on the grave of your grandparents, there's something wrong with like that. That's obscene. That's grotesque. Like that was one of the things that was nicely formulated on paper.
Alfred, yes? If I can jump in,
yes, please.
Exactly. Erasing of the memory. So this is all, part of that. What's written in the protocols is that first we will, destroy. Well, they will destroy us and then erase the memory of us. So if you're putting flowers on the grave of your grandparents, that means you're remembering them, and you're not allowed to do that. So I just wanted to jump in and add that. Continue, please.
Yeah, thank you, Monica. That's important because it is. It's straight out of the protocols. That is the part where even the memory of us is going. They want will erase that. They forbid us to remember our true our ancestors who were horribly massacred and murdered in a true Holocaust, and they force us to learn and crawl on our knees commemorating their fake, phony, pathetic, ugly, wretched lies of their 6 million dead Jews. I mean, this is so obscene, so grotesque. And as they are injecting all of our people with COVID rat poison, I mean, it doesn't get any more obscene, grotesque than what we have now. And it is the scale of this grotesqueness that makes people not that makes it difficult for them to grasp it, because they just cannot even begin to imagine such horrific evil. And yet that's the reality. So we all have to face up to it at some point in time. And the later that somebody does face up to it, the more it's going to just make them go insane, probably, because they were just, you know, to be the last person to figure that one out is very, very embarrassing. And anyway, let me continue with my time in Dresden there. So before I signed the woman who was working on the typewriter there on the computer, she did a very good job in actually writing down very precisely what I was saying, and then she'd always read it to me and so forth. And then before we left the train station, I had to sign three different things, and there's one guy that came in, there's different people came in as this thing was going on, and one of them, he basically like put a gun to my head and says, there's no options, like you are going, you know, I have to sign these things. So I says, okay, no problem. And I says, to avoid any additional harm to my person, I will sign this criminal extortion.
Duress.
Yeah, under duress.
Exactly.
I said under duress, this criminal extortion, basically. And then I put my name on it. And the woman there who was doing all the typing, she says, oh, that's fine. That's great. So in the end, at end of the day, I say this has been good for us, because these important statements that have to be made were made. They're on paper. What are they going to do now? You know. And then they drove me to our holiday house there where we were staying. I was able to pick up my stuff, and the whole way there was three of them in the car plus myself. And the elderly gentleman who was beside me, and I was telling him, you know, as I was commenting about the, because we're driving along the riverbanks, you know, on the Elbe River, and there's beautiful old mansions there, like the most beautiful architecture, and there's one after the other of these beautiful houses. And I was commenting about that, and it says, you know, you probably, because you see it every day, don't even probably appreciate anymore how beautiful this architecture is, and so forth, and how in Dresden in 1945, a jewel of a city, one of the most beautiful cities on this planet, were firebombed in a brutal, barbaric massacre of innocent people. And he says, oh yeah, I appreciate it. When I go someplace else and I come back here, I appreciate it, and so forth. And my conversation with these people was very, very civilized, and you know, I didn't get the feeling that they were my enemies. I got the more the feeling that they are helping us to advance our agenda of getting these things into the system, making people realize how completely hopeless it is to continue with these lies, these obscene lies, and we cannot get them to make the turn, basically, or the transition over to truth without engaging them. So this was a very productive engaging the regime, engaging the system. And I mean, look at, I'm on this talk show now with you now, and that was just like a week ago kind of thing, and that was a huge value add of this entire, you know, memorial thing. And so I think I've kind of running out of words right now. I mean, it was so.
Well, let's connect this to the bigger issue of the German depopulation and the rat poison, as you call it, and the complete submission, almost feminine submission to the USA, your ally in NATO, bombing and destroying your means of heating yourself and running your business, the Nord Stream, and all these we need, and I keep having the hope because Putin actually speaks German and was in East Germany, I believe, for a while. You've got to get Germany out of NATO, accepting the U.S. is run by Jews and is their enemy. You've got to have some force within Germany reclaim their manliness, and then all the rest of this will trip and start going back the right way. And the opposite is to keep going the way you are, and they're going to be demographically just bred out of existence and keep having more and more. I saw yesterday there's like a million basically Syrian Afghan refugee applications last year. We know 5 million are coming into the U.S. You've got to get an actual German head of Germany. Right now you just have these clowns who will do whatever the U.S. tells it and sit by and say nothing. Everybody knows the USA blew that up, and yet they haven't responded. Meanwhile, they're feeding white men into the meat grinder over in the Ukraine. So we got to see the destruction of NATO and Germany reemerge as Germany for Germans and have actual German leadership. And I'd love to think there's some kind of prospect for that. But these kind of people who are demonstrating and remembering their own victims of actual atrocities, rather than, as Alfred exactly said, these paying treasure to Jews to live high on the hog in Israel based on completely bogus atrocities. Do you appreciate how ironic and terrible that is, and the absolute chutzpah that they need to pull this off, that they are the victims, is beyond belief. This has to be reversed. And we have to have Germany simply have actual Germans come to the fore instead of these clowns who are just submissive to the United States.
Yeah, Alex, absolutely. I agree with you in terms of the chutzpah, and the it's like a quadruple slam on the Germans, because first they get so bombarded and you know, just demolished. The country is demolished. So many millions are killed there, of Germans are killed there. Then they are given the role of villain. They become the villain. So then everybody, first of all, doesn't care, or doesn't even care to find out about what actually happened to the Germans, because they're the villain anyway. So whatever happened to them, they deserved. Then when the Germans try to remember their own, they get demonized and criminalized for it, like happens at Dresden every year, and like Alfred getting arrested there just for simply wanting to join in on commemorating the dead. This is not a, like some people have said, oh, it's a protest march. It's not even a protest march. It is a commemoration. It is, like Alfred said, like when you go and lay flowers on the grave of your grandparents or your parents or anybody, any loved one. And so then they're not allowed to remember. Then the numbers are so diminished in the mainstream of how many died there, that you see the crime against Germans is like, you know, first there's the crime of killing so many of them, and innocence, you know, the deliberate crime of killing women and children. It was a deliberate strategy, kill as many German civilians as possible. I mean, when they put the bombs, they put them in areas of the workers' houses, the densely populated areas of cities, and firebombing, and just to kill as many civilians as possible. And they're not, the Germans are not allowed to remember and mourn. And so the crime against the Germans is just quadruple, and it's just, I mean, it's a thousandfold. It's just,
Monica, they also wanted, to sterilize all the men of procreation age after the war was over. That was, I think, the Morgenthau plan or something like that, wasn't it? The one
where they wanted Kaufman.
Germany must perish.
Yeah. 20,000 doctors could get the job done in 3 months, sterilize all the German men. And sterilize the women too. This was a genocide, a real true genocide, which, and then the Jews claimed victimhood with a bogus, nonsensical, pathetic Holocaust for themselves, and that's what they're teaching our children. Like, this is the grotesqueness, the disease. It's a disease. The Jewish, that's an aberration. It's like a cancer, you know. Anyway, back to you, Monica.
Yeah, and they call us the cancer, like Susan Sontag calls the white race the cancer, and so they reverse everything. I mean, everything that they accuse us of, whether it's accusing the Germans as a whole or the whites as white race as a whole, they are doing that. That's what they are doing. I mean, they taught us in school that Hitler wanted to take over the world. No, that is the Jews who want to take over the world. So everything is reversed, right down to the very basic. And it's fine that you got the name of the one who wrote the book about wanting to sterilize, that you got that mixed up, because it's a good opportunity to point out that there was more than one plan to annihilate the Germans. So the Morgenthau plan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was the one that made the plan to deindustrialize Germany, basically put Germany back into the Stone Age, and that would, by that would lose a lot of the German population.
Well, and look at blowing up the Nord Stream effectively does deindustrialize them. Now they have to pay a multiple for American liquefied natural gas, and their industry starts leaving Germany, which is the main industrial part of Europe, for the USA or China or wherever else. They're destroying it. So they've never – those plans, you can say they weren't directly fulfilled, but that same mentality is still there. It has done nothing but get stronger over the decades. They don't want whites to exist. They say this openly. You can find dozens of them saying it openly out of Israel.
Absolutely.
And all of them say it implicitly. They hate whites. And the problem is whites have been raised up in public schools and then in Sunday schools to believe that either they're guilty or that race doesn't exist and doesn't matter. And they're always, for whites, are prescribed some form of universalism. And that it has them racially going out of business. Nowhere are whites taught to value their race in any kind of publicly acceptable institution. And this is the problem that this show partly means to bring about, that you understand, like, every good thing that you want in life is basically tied to race. And if you don't have a monoracial setting, that is a one racial country and a white race, you're going to have all these problems you see in the newspaper every day. And once whites are a tiny minority, Jan can comment on that. Jan, what are whites in South Africa? What percentage of the population is white down there?
Alex, we're outnumbered about 11 to 1. The last I heard, we were 9%. And in Rhodesia, we were 4% at one point. And all I want to tell all of you is that as you become a smaller minority, let me tell you, you will see the ugliest things happening. You know, all this liberal bullshit, you know, they tell you, oh, no, you treated the blacks bad, this and that. No, when you become less and less, you will start to see the real nightmare. You will see how as they become more, how they will become more aggressive towards you.
Oh, yeah.
They are nasty.
We see that in the USA right now. Now, what I was going to say about St. Louis, I just, you know, if you want to really look at things at the overall and then at the microcosm, let's take St. Louis. Like, I had a couple of visitors up. I got relatives down there and friends down there. There's like 150, and this is in the middle of winter, there's like 150 carjackings. The Soros-backed prosecutor Kim Gardner basically doesn't prosecute anybody, especially any black criminals. You had a black criminal that had 20 violations who's out running around. He hit some girl over here for a softball tournament and cost her legs. Okay, I don't even know that she was white. She was an extremely high yeller, like probably 7/8 white and 1/8 black, but whatever. This stuff goes on all the time. In fact, my own relative who's lived down there most of his life, he had his car stolen. Now, this is years ago, just in broad daylight by a couple of black teens, and they trashed it, and they found it a couple weeks later. You get in the wrong situation, you're going to have a trouble, and most of the major cities are like this. And so then you look at the larger level, and wherever blacks are is essentially equivalent to South Africa. Wherever they're in the majority, they just – crime is just not a thing. It's just another way of getting stuff for them. They will basically all side. Oh, the big thing I was going to mention was, it's really funny, kind of the waking up of the white middle class to the extent it can be awakened, is Scott Adams, famous for being wrong about the clot shot. But anyway, the author of Dilbert the Cartoon, which got yanked out of a bunch of papers. Well, he's now gotten radicalized and just has said, he does like a daily, I guess, little video show on one of the video channels. He said blacks just, He said, I spent 65 years trying to help blacks. He's now I just tell whites, blacks are, referring to some study of black attitudes towards whites. He says, blacks are a hate group. Whites have to stay completely away from them. This is the most middle of the road, middle class white guy who thinks he gets it but doesn't. And he's now saying this overtly. He's willing to put that on video himself. No one captured him saying it. He said it himself and posted it. Whites must just simply get away from blacks, stay away from blacks. I'm absolutely done trying to help them. So that's
Alex,
a little something.
Wonderful.
Alex, you know, what about the case in Los Angeles? Just recently, where that Negro ran a red light, and in doing so, he hit a bicycle. The doctor, why don't you probably know more about that than me. Why don't you tell that?
I don't recall. It was like a Mexicanized black guy who's super hated whites. He just ran down some white guy and started shrieking about it. It was all over the Daily News. He killed the white doctor purely out of racial motive.
Yeah, add to it, though, is that after he hit him, he got out of his car with a knife, and as the doctor was dying on the street, he stabbed him in the back while he was screaming racial slurs. Now, imagine if the race role was reversed. Can you imagine a white guy runs a red light, hits a Negro? Of course, Negroes don't ride bikes so much, I don't think, but hits a Negro, sends him clear across the intersection, gets out of his car and stabs him in the back while screaming something about dirty niggers or something. I mean, can you imagine? That would have been a call to exterminate the whites on the spot.
Yeah,
we'd
never hear about that for 10 years and there'd be rioting and whatever. So whites as the majority, they're still slightly the majority. They're treated as like absolutely submissive, captive slave population. So over time, all whites follow what has been done to the Germans because, again, we've talked about this before. Jews see essentially all whites are Hitler. The white race, any individual in the white race and Hitler are the same thing to the Jew mind. They all need to be destroyed and memory of their kind blotted out. And they use their media not just to cover up stuff like the crime he's talking about, but to literally falsify by blackening our history, whether fictional or real, our literature and our history. They take white characters and white authors and blacken them. Christ in the Last Week, that perfect example. Even on the small stuff, Roald Dahl, one of the best white writers that ever existed, and I would say the best children's author that ever existed, they are now bowdlerizing, that is, censoring and literally changing the words in the new editions. Of course, he's an evergreen. They're always publishing Roald Dahl, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and all that. They're literally changing the words because they're not sensitive enough in the usual balderdash. This is the most obscene thing I've seen in a long time. So,
I'd like
to say fuck you to his relatives who allowed them. I'm assuming his relatives of his control his estate and benefit from the money it brings in allowing these publishers to do that. But that's how much Britain is not one iota better than Germany in terms of being an absolute slave state. But that they could do this is just the ultimate obscenity.
That's terrible. I hadn't heard that they're changing the words.
That's all over the news in this last week. Look it up. A lot of people commenting on it. Daily Mail out of UK is terribly biased. It invents literally multiple lies a day to tell about Putin and Russia, for instance. But still, it sends people all over the world to take a lot of photos. So at least you get it generally hits on everything that's going on, even though
it's really good to keep track of what some of these mainstream sources are telling the people. Of course it is. It's part of our research. See what they're telling the people. Here's something else that I came across just a little while ago. You've probably all heard of the name Albert Schweitzer. He lived from 1875 to 1965. Okay. So there's even a provincial park in Alberta near where I lived for many years called Schweitzer Park. So he's actually still quite looked up to. He was the brilliant French philosopher, scientist, medical doctor, author. I didn't know this. He was one of the foremost authorities on Johann Sebastian Bach, so a musicologist and an exceptional organist, clergyman, theologian, like missionary, anthropologist, philanthropist, and profound Christian. And he actually won the the Nobel Peace Prize in 1952. So that's a bit of background on Albert Schweitzer. And liberals always praise Schweitzer as the ultimate humanitarian who gave his life to try and help the poor Africans, but they never share his full, uncensored opinion of the matter. And I know I want to read you a paragraph here of what he actually said about that. But you see, here he spent many years in Africa trying to help them, right? So, okay, this is what he said, quote, "I have given my life to try to alleviate the sufferings of Africa, something that all white men that have lived there like I must learn and know. Drum roll." I'm adding the drum roll. "These individuals are a sub-race. They have neither the intellectual, mental, or emotional abilities to equate or share equality with the white man in any of the functions of our civilization. I have given my life to try and bring unto them the advantages which our civilization must offer. But I have become well aware that we must retain this status, we, the superior, they, the inferior, whenever a white man seeks to live among them as their equals, they will either destroy him or devour him, and they will destroy all of his work. Let the white men from anywhere in the world who would come to help Africa remember that you must continually retain this status. You, the master, and they, the inferior, like children, you would help and teach. Never fraternize with them as equals." Finish the quote. End of quote. That is what Albert Schweitzer said.
Monica,
yeah, well,
if I may just jump in there. Monica, you can't say it better than he said it. I've observed this myself, and I've spoken to people here in South Africa, and I've pointed out to them, I've said to them, look, can't you see that you cannot coexist with these people, and you cannot work together with them? This whole liberalism and diversity, this stuff cannot work. It is impossible. It's not that it can't work because we're not trying hard enough. It is physically impossible for it to work. And the only thing that I ever saw that worked was when whites were the boss. That I lived through that. I saw that with my own eyes. Everything that Albert Schweitzer is saying there, 100% correct. 100%
and I'll just, correct. Yes, and I'll add to this because, you see, many people will consider that statement as, well, especially in our, you know, we've been so indoctrinated, but they will consider that statement very insulting or quote unquote racist, right? This word racist, this weaponized term. But remember who made the statement. This was Albert Schweitzer. He was in Africa not to subjugate or exploit the Africans. He was there explicitly to help them. That was what he went to Africa for, because that was his motivation. He wanted to help them. So if people object to such a statement, let such peoples refuse all help and save themselves. You see, and Jan, you have been saying this for a long time, that if the white man in South Africa would just get out of this role of always rescuing and fixing things up after the black people have destroyed the infrastructure, for example, and if the white people would just let that happen and not get in there and save them by fixing it all, then okay, then things would just fall apart real fast, but the white people could just start over and have their own, you know, it has to be separate. Like, it cannot be all integrated, right?
Yes.
Jan,
yes,
over to you.
Yes, absolutely, Monica. This is absolutely true. You cannot mix it together. I and many others have worked in a multicultural situation. When Black Rule came, I worked in corporate companies, big, sophisticated companies, where they had the money and where blacks and whites and Asians and colored people, mixed race, everybody had to work together. Monica, I watched it closely and I observed how, listen to this, this is the result of a lot of careful observation. Even white productivity goes down when whites work in that mishmash of a setup. And another,
oh, that's really interesting. Explain that a little bit. Expand on that a little bit before you go on to your next point, Jan, because that's really important.
Monica, the key thing, one of the key things that no whites anywhere grasp anymore, the con job that has fooled all whites on the planet, everybody, is leadership. That you need the best people at the top, and your leadership structure must be based on merit. So you have the very best at the top, then the second best below them, third best, etc., etc. Now, whites as a rule, all white civilization, whites as a general rule, create their structures like that. When they form a company, when they make a military force, anything that whites do, we are very much driven mostly by meritocracy, and we don't like other nonsense. Now, the first thing that you can take away, if you take away the white leadership at the top, what nobody realizes is what you lose when you take the top guy away and you replace him with a black. But if you carry on with that process and you take that whole management structure away and you put a bunch of idiots in that whole management structure, you then start seeing all kinds of weird things that you will not even be able to believe. I must tell you, I used to sit in meetings and watch a black guy suddenly come up and he'd talk with great authority and everything. But at the end of the day, what was really important is that he truly does not have the technical and mental grasp of the depth of his subject. He doesn't have the excellence that a white man in a similar position would have. And whites don't realize how terrible it is to replace that leadership. And once you drive the whites down, once you get rid of white leadership at the top, and you now have whites at lower levels, and they've got to report to idiots who don't know what they're doing, that's when you start seeing that even the whites become more dysfunctional. The whole thing falls apart. The whole thing falls apart. You won't believe the kinds of weird things that start happening. Now, in Africa, when blacks originally got to take over countries in Africa, and they started putting these black presidents in power. And look in America, for example. Look in America, how many big cities in America are run by blacks? And every one of them is a mess. Every one of them becomes a mess. But whites have become so used to this notion that it doesn't really matter if the guy at the top is a black guy, because he actually can do a good job. People don't realize how terrible, terrible, terrible it is that white nations and white structures are not run by whites according to the standards of white people. I can tell you right now that the only reason that all our countries are in a mess is because all kinds of garbage have been placed in top positions. And it happens in companies, it happens in countries, and all of these things are very easy to fix. For normal white people to fix this is very easy, because all whites believe in a meritocracy. So when we give somebody a job, we say, who is the best person for this job? And that's how all of us work. All of us. We all think like this. And I can tell you, if whites could just take control of their countries and societies and quickly toss out the garbage and put the people in that you need, you'll see that every single country, every single situation will turn around on a dime. It'll be like a miracle, and people, right. You know, that's
or
that's
Orania is proof of that. Orania, the little oasis where it's de facto whites only. They'll deny it's racial, but it obviously is. And everything is building up on every street. And so the problems we have are completely external, and we need to understand we're inherently, like Jan is saying, in merit. I think we more or less racially inherently respect ability, and we're inherently meritocratic.
although that's drummed out of us, because these affirmative action programs, and when people argue that, gee, you're hiring people not based on merit but because of this affirmative action, but they will always come back with this argument, well, it has nothing to do with ability or inherent ability. It only has to do with that these people have been prejudiced against, like that they have been oppressed by us. It's always our fault. We've oppressed them. So we just have to correct that history. Otherwise, they don't have a chance to get to the top. The only way they can get into these positions of leadership is by this affirmative action, whatever, you know, that's, everybody knows what that refers to. But really, when you think about it, so they are actually the only ones being racist by doing this affirmative action stuff, because it is based on the opposite of affirmative action, based on the opposite of merit. But it has nothing to do with merit. These people are just as talented as we are, but they have been oppressed. That's the only reason they're not in positions of leadership, because they've been oppressed and we've been so bad and racist and evil to them, and that we've kept them down, and because we have white privilege, don't you know? And that's the only reason they haven't made it to positions of leadership. So we have to help them get to their positions of leadership. Meanwhile, decades and decades go by with affirmative action programs that have supposedly corrected the wrongs of the past. That's what they always told us. We're just correcting the wrongs of the past. And yet they still engage in this. Maybe they call it something different now, but we have to see the population being reflected in our leadership positions, or in the policing, there's not enough police of color, because, you know, if there's 10% black people in society, we should have 10% police being black, and et cetera, et cetera. They're always telling us how we have to reflect the population in all roles. Everybody has to be equally represented in all roles, including leadership. So this is how it's being pumped into our heads. Like, so we might by nature be respectful or in agreement with, yeah, we should do things based on merit, but we've been so indoctrinated to not accept that, because we've been so indoctrinated to think that we are all equal. We have all the same innate abilities. All that's where it comes from. So we should be having go ahead.
The morality of it comes from Christianity, which is why I harp on that continually, because it's the second thing you discover after all this. We're talking on the first level of objectively what's going on. But when you get back to what's really causing us not to fight it, it's Christianity. But on the legal front, what you're saying was, yeah, they presented, their calling card was, we just want equality of opportunity, we just want a chance, we've been discriminated against, if you just treat us legally the same, we're going to rise to our natural ability because all men are equal, right? You say you believe that, right? And but the reality of it is, no, what's going to happen is it's essentially just it's an implicit tax on whites. We are going to privilege these blacks through every step of their existence, from falsifying or test scores or dropping standards, letting them into school, and then giving them higher grades than they'd achieve. And then they get on the job at all the Fortune 500s, and they're discriminated in favor of all the way down to the warehouse. And now it goes from equality to now they talk equity, which means we want to do less work and we want to get exactly the same results you are. And if you want to get ahead to the white managers, oh, well, you have to prove that you promoted blacks and feminists, et cetera, et cetera. And so their calling card was equality, but the reality, they wanted to flip the table and they wanted black supremacy, black and Jewish supremacy, where we have to essentially be enslaved to pay for them. And if you look at the study of who actually pays into the taxes and who benefits, the white males are the only group that essentially is carrying the burden. We talked about this last time, for the rest of society. And these are just their ways of moralizing and justifying this extremely unfair situation. And so whites are enslaved to pay for their inferiors. Yeah, no, if we had our way, we would simply, the whole problem is solved if you let people hire and fire whoever they want for whatever reason. But of course, Jews don't want that. They want to use these corporations as another tool of social engineering and force any corporation with more than, 12 or 50 employees has to constantly file paperwork on this stuff and prove that it's giving blacks the chance and that they're represented at appropriate levels, whatever the federal government says. It's just a complete and utter going tyranny. And whites aren't able to focus on business and improving things because they're forced to play along with this racial charade and pay whites to do the actual work. And then so that they're free riding these blacks, essentially, and lesbians and these other freaks. And this has, as Monica said, been going on for literally 50 years now in the U.S. It really got institutionalized and running in the 50s after the legal changes were made in the 60s. Bloom Rosen under Nixon was the main guy who really got it going. And now it's effectively it's just another way of taxing and enslaving whites while browbeating them morally, so that they're submission, that they won't ever stand up or even think about their own interests. Why are we tied to blacks at all? Whites have zero interest in forced political association with Jews and blacks or any other race. It's all to our detriment. And we need to stop pretending we can solve the problems of others when we can't even solve or recognize the problems of our own.
You know, yeah, I want to add the ugly things that we are now experiencing, like, for example, the doctor that got hit by a car driven by a black, and then the black isn't satisfied that he just hit this guy, but he gets out of his car and stabs him in the back. Plus all the ganging up of white students now in schools as soon as the blacks feel empowered to do so because they are numerically in the lead kind of thing.
Alfred, let me interrupt. The girl who committed what he's maybe alluding to, but one example, a girl, I think a German surname like Cook or something, her dad was in the military in New Jersey, which used to have loads and loads of German descended people. She commits suicide because she's being bullied. She's being bullied in a like almost all white school with just a small percentage of blacks, as I understand it. So even in a white school, the minority is ganging up on a white student to the point she's committing suicide.
Wow.
This is utterly absurd what we're tolerating as a majority in our countries.
And you know, it's Alex, a backdrop of the white guilt, though. It's a backdrop of that we cannot resist that because then we're racist. That's the backdrop. Guilt
plus the media plus the law. Yeah. The law. Don't underestimate the laws are pushing all
and,
that stuff.
And Alex, what's happening now, though, is all these ugly things that are happening seem to be the missing ingredient to have us come to our senses, to enable us to do what needs doing, to reclaim our civilization. Because if we had gone from just this indoctrinated state and all these visible minorities, as they like to be called, if they didn't proceed to prove and show their true face now when they are able to, then we would be missing the evidence we need to do what needs doing to reclaim our civilization. Because they had their chance, they showed their true colors, and now we know what needs to be done. And because it's just the magnitude of this thing that makes it appear as if it's going real slow, but believe me, under the surface, people are waking up in droves now like ever before, and that's what we can expect. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll give you a little example of something the recent that I found out is going on here in the colleges in British Columbia, Canada, and the students who are actually starting to see what's going on and that they pretty much have to gag on this. But okay, so a young person that I've been in contact with a little while ago, he's just been through college. I don't remember what his field is, but I think it's some kind of a practical skills field. And he was really, really bright and acing all his courses, and his marks were really in the 90s and just doing really well. But before he could graduate, he was forced to put down a statement in one of his final papers or whatever that he had to submit I have to still get the exact wording of what he had to put down there, but it was something to do with he had to acknowledge, admit, write it down in writing that he had always had a lifetime of white privilege, and this is why he was able to be in the position that he was in, that he was doing so well. Something about white privilege. He had to put that on paper or he was not going to graduate. He was not going to get his certificate that said he had, you know, not just aced this course, but passed it at all. And yet his, you know, he was just acing everything. He was a really bright kid, but he had to put that, otherwise he was not going to get his papers acknowledging that he had completed this course. So, and that would have implications of what kind of employment he could get and et cetera. So there's an example. Now he gagged, he kind of, you know, held his nose and did this, but hating every minute of it. And just so that he could get his papers and, you know, hopefully get a job. And I mean, if you're in your early 20s and you're just starting out in life, like for us, we have actually, it's hard for us to actually fathom how difficult this situation is for young people now, if they want to openly resist this, because they're at the beginning of their careers, they're beginning their jobs, like, you know, it's very, I mean, those who have resisted everything at a young age, like resisted the jab, resisted everything, they are heroes. And I would say this young man was, I mean, he's waking up, we have to celebrate that. And so, you know, he was relating this story and he said how he had to just hold his nose and gag, but he wanted to get that certificate that said, yeah, he's got this certain trade now under his belt or whatever. But that's what they're forced to do. Yeah, I'm only here because of, you know, white privilege and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'll pass it over to one of you to comment.
Yeah, it's like this. If somebody punches you when you're down, Monica, if you're, let's say you're wounded, you're on the ground and somebody comes and pours salt into your wound, you'll suffer. It's torture, but you will never forget. And all of these people will remember what suffering they had to go through when the day of reckoning comes. And that day is coming very quickly, very soon. And then let's see how those other people will whine and wince and beg for mercy and so forth. But we will remember what they showed us when they thought they were on top. And they're not going to be on top much longer. In fact, they're falling down at free fall speed as we speak.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, I see that Jan has just stepped away, and I was thinking
I had my Alex thing off. Jump. I wanted to comment on that.
That's what I thought. I figured you wanted to get
no. I turned my thing off because I wasn't making any noise while you guys were speaking, but then I forgot it was off. That happens sometimes.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say was this sort of loyalty or disloyalty to the white race, loyalty to other races, oath, is becoming more and more common across a broader range. And that's what I wanted to get from you in a second. But like I was looking at a graphic here. This is from the largest Lutheran church in America. First example, sign the pledge below. I commit to study, prayer, and action to become an anti-racist individual in an anti-racist church. Sign the pledge. Largest Lutheran church in America. Okay. Vox Day was talking about this, how the convergence, as he calls it, of Luther. He's from Minnesota and the Lutheran stuff up there. But another thing is, most of these professors now, when they apply for a job at most universities, almost all the top ones have to talk about and sign similar loyalty oath to how, tell us how you've have advanced diversity and minority so far and how you're going to do it if you're hired. So this sort of thing is becoming more and more common. These people used to whine back in the old days about American loyalty oaths, i.e. fighting communism in Hollywood back in the 50s. Well, they're doing it on a 100 times wider scale now and for 100 times more perverse reason. But the field you were talking about, Monica, was that in a trade or?
You know what? I'm not 100% sure right now, but I'm going to find out more about that particular student's program.
To get a professional, a technical professional certificate, yet he has this anti-white politics forced on him.
Alfred has a really good story about the guy that applied for IBM. Why don't you tell that story, Alfred? Because there we see it's a 100% technical job, and yet he didn't get it. Why don't you tell that story? Go ahead.
When I applied for IBM in 19 1977 in Canada, the last question that the personnel director there asked me was, Mr. Schaefer, if we take you, are you prepared to move for this company, you know, either for, you know, education courses or whatever, like, are you prepared to move? And I says, yeah, of course, no problem. And then 40 years later, in 2017, I was on a speaking tour in Canada, and I was talking about psychological warfare. And after my presentation in Toronto, a young man came to me, and he said, you know, Alfred, I had applied at IBM to become a systems engineer. And the last question that I was asked by the personnel guy was, are you prepared to work with a transvestite if you work for our company? And he didn't really understand what working with a transvestite has to do with systems engineering. And he sort of laughed a little bit and shook his head. He says, what kind of a question is that? Are you putting me on or something? Well, then the personnel guy said, I see we have an attitude problem here. And he did not get the job. Now, I say that if a company such as IBM, and all the companies are the same, basically, they start to get their political masters telling them what the criteria are for people to work there. And that is where these Jews do not understand where they have overstepped their limits, because this is killing everything. Everything that the Jew touches is being killed. When a company like IBM starts to make that a criteria, you have to want to work with transvestites to work there, then that company is on a slippery slope down to its own death. It has to come out of that. It has to recover. And then during the COVID years, I heard that IBM was asking its employees to become, they have to get vaccinated. Well, I'd say, boy, am I glad I'm not working there anymore. I'd have to quit. You know, first of all, I don't really fancy working with transvestites, and I certainly don't fancy getting a lethal injection, you know, that'll kill me in 3 or 4 years, maybe even right away. I mean, how grotesque is that when a company starts to inject its own employees with rat poison? I mean, something is out of whack.
Well, yeah, the larger the government is, and all these top ones are tied to it by contracting, and you've got federal employment law. I don't know how it is in Canada, but it's going to be a variation of the same thing. They're all forced to go along with this ideology, and that ideology, it used to be just, okay, it's in the newspapers and it's in college, so you've got the control of the intellect, but then they bribe all the politicians, it's in Congress. And then they move into just neutral corporations that don't really necessarily have anything to do with politics. And finally, it's darn near everywhere. Of course, it's in the K-12 schools as well. So right now, that's just spread everywhere, and it's just the withering finger of death when Jews touch everything. And I don't know how these like kids like Monica is describing, how in the world are they going to work for a corporation when it's so anti-white? Everybody has to try to find his own way. Almost at this point, if you're young and white, you got to try to do something independent. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's
Monica.
Right. That's right. Okay. And I'll just add to what you're saying, Alex, because you were talking about the churches as well. And what an irony that these people having to sign that thing in the largest Lutheran church. And what an irony that's Lutheran, like from Martin Luther, who was exposing the Jews, what the Jews were doing, right? I mean, he's now called anti-Semitic because of, you know, the Jews and their lies, right? And so they've infiltrated. And how do they get into universities? Because I remember my other brother saying, oh, you mean all those university professors are wrong, when I was having a debate with him about one of these issues. And at the time, I wasn't yet confident enough to just say it. Now I would say it. Yes, they are. And this is how they do it. Like our friend Anthony Hall was fired from his job as he was a history professor in Southern Alberta, University of Lethbridge, and they employed all kinds of tactics to do that. One of the things they did to him, because he was talking about Israel and 9/11 and these things in conjunction with one another, and he was talking about, you know, forbidden things and kind of pointing his finger at Israel for a lot of stuff that they were doing. Anyway, they planted a a post on his Facebook page while he was traveling, so they know already that he's not going to be looking at his Facebook page every minute of every day while he's traveling. And this was a very sort of, you know, controversial post that somebody else had put there. But this is one of the grounds for firing, because, oh, he must agree with this post because he didn't remove it right away, this kind of thing. So this is what they do to professors who step out of line. And I'm just making a very big story, very, very condensed and short, but they just had to get rid of him. Now, he did fight like crazy, and he kind of won, but didn't really win in that he never did go back into the classroom anymore and wasn't able to teach anymore. But he did win back his salary and whatnot, and then he had to retire, basically had to. But he did retire with all his, you know, credentials in place. But anyway, that's kind of a long story. But that's how they keep the professors in line, because other professors would observe that and they get a nice salary and they would want to keep their nice salary. And so they would just kind of go straight ahead and keep their, you know, their those slightly deviant opinions to themselves and not talk about certain subjects, because they can see what happens if you do talk about certain subjects. So that's how they keep the university professors in line. And then more and more over the years and over the decades, they've hired university professors that come straight out of the, basically the Frankfurt School and, you know, cultural Marxism, liberalism. It's just absolutely a hotbed at universities of these kinds of ideas, you know. So that's how they do it. Over to somebody else now. Thanks.
But yeah, Monica, this is there. The end of this game is inadvertently then when we go into hyperinflation, because there's no more real value being produced. Everyone wants to have access to real value without producing any real value. And that's where this entire – when once we step away from meritocracy, where the merit is rewarded and your leader is the one who can do it best – once we get away from that system, then it starts to just degenerate and degenerate until at the end they print money, which is what they've been doing now for quite some time. So they can all the money that they are spending is going – the money that they have, which they have printed, is going after less and less true value. And people will be, as Klaus Schwab says, you will own nothing and be happy. You will own nothing is very true, but you will not be happy. That's the part where he erred on. In fact, this is the total war. We are now experiencing the total decay of our money system, our financial system, because there is just no more real value being produced. And their final attempt to try to stall that out a little bit, the collapse, is to have us forced to buy everything with digital currency, because then they can just turn everybody's savings off and put it onto their own account and claim whatever little value there still is anywhere, but it doesn't change anything at all. We will be going back to a system where we will be working and bartering what we're doing. You know, we do something, and if we can't do something that somebody else wants, then we will be in a bad spot and in a tight spot and end up starving. Like, I mean, this is the horrendous situation that we find ourselves in. We should never have allowed it to go as far as it has, but it has. We were asleep, and that's where we find ourselves now.
Alfred, yeah. Yes. Whole thing that you're mentioning about efficiency, and that all these things that they're doing are destroying the efficiency of companies and economies. Yes, we can call it parasite overload.
Absolutely, yeah.
Between the Jews and all the other scum that they're bringing in and pumping up, the beauty about it that I've seen here in Africa, and I've not even discussed the things that I used to follow in Zimbabwe and other related countries. Alfred, the amazing thing is that as much as they stuff everything up, as long as the whites, even if they toss all the whites out of everything, the whites just start doing their own little thing quietly. And because whites operate in their efficient little ways and so forth, you'll be amazed that even when you think the whites can't survive, the whites do survive. And this is why I say that even here in South Africa, the irony of the situation is, consider where we are in South Africa today. The blacks, our government has actually declared a state of emergency, but it's an electricity state of emergency. I'm not joking with you. This is real. They passed the laws, and a state of emergency basically allows military type of law to be administered at any time. So if the government wants to, for example, say tomorrow that none of us must, we're not allowed to go out of our houses, that it would be a criminal act, etc., they can pass a law tomorrow and do that. They did that with COVID. They did that with COVID when you were still in jail. And they are now saying, oh, there's a state of emergency, blah, blah, blah. But they are the ones that created the problem, and they are the ones unable to fix the problem that they created. Meanwhile, the normal average whites are already busy buying generators, solar panels, getting gas bottles, etc. And the whites, for the most part, are functioning. So the irony is that even as these blacks and other parasites have got more and more power, their power is not that good, and their stuff is falling apart. So as these Jews are putting these rules into these companies, they are damaging these companies, exactly as you say. They're damaging the economy. They're damaging everything. And I do agree with the notion that the more whites can break out, even if whites just start small businesses, it's something I've been thinking about a lot. I actually want to do a whole video about a white economy and how a white economy would function. And I'll tell you the secret of Africa's survival. The secret of Africa's survival is that Africa's insanely rich in minerals. And virtually every single African country has allowed Western companies or other companies to mine in Africa. And so the vast majority of what's still keeping Africa from totally collapsing is simply that they are selling the minerals to the Western world. That is the only reason that all of Africa hasn't collapsed into a total heap, and everybody's died. That's the only thing that's stopping it. And for whites to create their own economy is actually very simple. Very simple. It's not difficult. So the irony is that we can outlive their collapse, and all of you should be able to outlive it.
Yeah, get multiple income streams, network with people for business, not just for politics. Do whatever you can off the money, because they got the CBDC, the digital slave money, coming as quickly as they can do it. So we're going to have to find ways around that. Be very conscious of all this. Teach as much as you can to young people. But, Jan, I suspect China is simply going to wind up running all of Africa. If you look over 150 years, if whites don't get their act together, I don't see how any continent as large as Africa and as resource rich for a population that absolutely needs it, like China, even though their population's going down, I just don't see how they don't end up running it if Europeans and whites don't overcome the Jew. What do you think?
Whites need to seize Africa back, truly.
Oh, I agree. I'm just talking about what's going to happen if we don't.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. If we don't do it, then anybody else can come. The Indians can come. The Chinese can come. Anyone can take it over. And it would be a huge loss to our civilization.
Let me just interrupt. Today, right before we recorded this, I saw, I think it's in Daily Mail today, they're saying that literal Indians own more real estate in London than English do.
I read that also. That made me sick. That made me sick. That really made me sick when I read that. That is their reward. That is how the Jews say, thanks, Brits, for helping us send Germany back to the Stone Age. That's how they say thank you. I mean, you know, like this is that if they have a Pakistani as a prime minister, they have Muslims as mayor of London. They have, where are the white men? Does the UK not have white men anymore? I mean, holy smokes, it makes me ill.
Sod and Winnie. They paid Sod and Winnie's debts, and in exchange, he started bombing the civilian population of Germany. And after he'd done it for enough time, they knew that Hitler would be forced to respond. And that's what happened. Very few people are aware that Britain started civilian bombing Germany. We're not even talking about Dresden. We're talking more at the start of the war.
Well, the other thing
– here's the result of that now. Because he put money, his own personal interest and career ahead of every other consideration – this is the result in Britain, a completely enslaved Jew-beholden state. And yet the conservatives looked at Churchill as the greatest man who ever existed, the greatest man of the right, the greatest conservative that ever existed. It's a guy who literally sold out to the Jews.
Well, if it wasn't for Churchill, the British Empire would still have been here today. I would still be living in the British Empire in Rhodesia.
Hitler admired the British Empire and had no design at all to destroy it, but because they at the crucial moment they could not produce men of good character, their leader became someone who was willing to accept money for Jews in exchange for ruining his own nation and its entire empire. And we're living in the detritus and aftermath of that terrible decision, of that nasty drunk.
Yeah, Alex. And the other thing I was seeing was Churchill, you know, they always are, Hitler killed people, which he didn't do. But, you know, Churchill, I believe, murdered at least 1 million civilians. But I wonder how many he really murdered, what the actual death toll is. There's your genocidal maniac. And I did publish stuff on my website about Churchill testing anthrax in Holland and other places in World War II, because Churchill wanted to absolutely exterminate all Germans. And in that that thing about Germany must perish, what I also want to add in there is that horrible Jew Kaufmann who wrote that, he said that he even drew a map of how Germany must be split up so that everybody else takes parts of Germany. So not only do you genocide the Germans, but you make sure that Germany as a state never exists ever again. There's no such place on the map. And I do believe that Jews are responsible for removing Prussia from the map. They don't even like Prussia, hey?
Yeah, it's true. They wanted to exterminate the Prussian characteristics out of, you know, the people. That's what they wanted to do. It's really a disease. This whole methodology is just a disease. And
Alfred, if I may say something about the Jews, the more I study our history, the more I think of Jews as the original parasite. And the other thing is that Jews, on many, many, many occasions, were either supposed to have been driven out or exterminated, but whites always gave them another chance and constantly forgave these people and let them come back again and again and again. And the real reason we're sitting with this total nightmare now, where Jews have got all kinds of weird powers and weird abilities to do all kinds of creepy, weird things in our society that works against us, is because we've been too nice to them and we've given them too many chances. Now they are so practiced that they can play with us like a fiddle, and they can do all kinds of things, and now we struggle like crazy to regain control of one country.
Well, look at it. You ever hear repetitions? You need X number of hours or thousands of repetitions to get good at something. Well, look at what we're getting repetitions at. We're getting repetitions at being slaves of the Jews and learning how to think and learning how to act and learning what we dare not say and learning to be scared and cringe and hide away and not to act as normal Aryan men have acted until the last 100 years, say. This is sick, and it needs to be pointed out that we are essentially being domesticated into upper-end house niggers, essentially.
Brilliantly said, Alex. Totally agree with every word that you say there. If I may give a little bit of news from South Africa quickly.
Please,
go ahead.
Okay, well, some quick news. The other day I saw on a billboard that they were saying that the numbers of potholes in South Africa now number in the millions. So potholes by the millions. Though where I live, because I live in a city, at least they're still managing to fix most of them. But I know that in the rest of the country, especially in the rural areas, Alex, you can hardly drive. In those small towns and things, the potholes are insane. I know that whites were busy fixing potholes in the small towns years ago already. Another thing, sort of almost like Dresden, our Battle of Blood River is our most important white event that we commemorate. And when blacks came to power, the blacks actually changed the name, and they changed it to the Day of Reconciliation, which at least most of the whites know that this is not the Day of Reconciliation. This is the day when we kick the Zulus' ass, Battle of Blood River. That's our day. But, you know, just changing everything that they possibly can. But a big thing that went down in the last 24 hours or so is, you know, with our electricity problems, and during the time that we've been doing this show, the electricity was first off, then it was on, then it was off again. And that's all happened in the last 2 hours. So everything we're doing is running off of my backups. But what happened was the electricity Eskom was run by a white guy called De Reiter. He took over, I can't remember, a year or two ago, because a black guy was running it and it was being run into the ground. So finally they found a white guy that is willing to work with them and who's willing to kiss their ass as well. So this De Reiter guy has been in charge of Eskom for the last year or two. I can't remember the exact amount of time. Anyway, he eventually, despite being an ass-licking, ass-kissing white, he eventually reached a point where he just couldn't carry on anymore, and he resigned because he could see that even he can't get anything done. But what he did the other day was he gave an interview. And I actually am going to put the interview, it's very short, I'm going to put it on this show on the front along with Alfred's arrest. And De Reiter was interviewed by a white woman, and he finally just tells it as it is. And he starts saying things like, well, there are four huge crime syndicates that are busy stealing money out of Eskom. And these crime syndicates are stealing in so many ways. And one of those crime syndicates even has its own specialized hit squad that goes and assassinates people. They've got a squad of 60 to 70 people, and they assassinate somebody, at least one person a week. and he went on and he spoke about all this corruption and crime and assassination and all this madness that's going on in Eskom. And the moment that they heard about it, they immediately turned. He was busy working his He'd resigned and he was working his time period that he's supposed to. Anyway, they immediately terminated that. So finally, some of the truth is coming out, and it's ugly and it's horrific and it's doing the rounds in South Africa like crazy. And the other thing about Eskom is that they hired 18,000 additional people into Eskom in the last 10 years. So here's another African situation where you can hire more people, but the productivity goes down. The productivity per person drops, and the productivity of the organization as a whole drops. So, you know, all of these things that you wouldn't believe in a white Western country, that's what happened. That's how it works in Africa. And I want to tell you just another little story. There's somebody that I know who's involved in very high-tech security stuff. And this guy works for a company that does very special, very high-tech security. And he told me a couple of months ago, he told me about how that company was brought into one of those Eskom power stations to try and sort out the crime. And he said that they worked away there for a month, and they were starting to catch everybody. They were catching there's all kinds of weird trickery going on there. And they were catching people like crazy, and they dropped the crime at that Eskom power station by 90% in 1 month. Then the black management clearly didn't like it. And so the black management actually started changing the rules and started telling these whites, this white-owned company, no, you mustn't do that anymore. You mustn't do that anymore. And so the bottom line is that after the black management told them what changes to make, crime has been increasing again. So those guys then, I think those guys then left and pulled out from that particular power station. But that's just to show you how weird things really are. And it's so creepy. And ultimately, you can't work with these people. And these people have got, they've got more problems than you can imagine. And they are stealing like you cannot believe. There was a thing I mentioned months ago of them stealing like 2,000 tons of coal a day just out of trucks. They got all kinds of scams, and these things become so corrupt, and everybody's busy stealing. Oh yes, another thing De Reiter said that you can pay somebody in Eskom, you pay somebody a couple of thousand rand, which would be like a few hundred dollars, and you can pay them to walk into a place, take a screwdriver and just jab it into certain things and break some stuff, and then the company that will be called to fix it, now they will get the job. So that is sort of, let's call it capitalism African style. And these are the kinds of things you wouldn't even think about in a normal Western society, but this is how it actually works in Africa.
Can I say something that I just read a couple days ago about Brazil? So this is happening worldwide, different rates in different countries. In Brazil, Lula is back at the helm, kind of thing. And he was saying that mandatory vaccinations will now be coming in, and parents who do not vaccinate their children will be taken from them. So here now we have the criminality at the level where the government wants to inject the population with rat poison and get lots of money for it, and then kill the population by doing that, and then the problem solved. Nobody's going to come to and claim their money back. You see, it is total, utter suicidal genocide. It's insanity. You know, it's what you're describing in South Africa. We're seeing that like Brazil, South Africa, in different geographies, Same thing.
Same population mix, you know, blacks and whites. The very southern portion of Brazil is very white, very European, and it runs absolutely perfectly. But Alfred, all of these things come from the inability to speak about IQ and intelligence, and this is what comes from it when you live with lies and you take lies as facts. And now you try to make decisions based on total garbage, utter rubbish, and it won't work. I put out a little video the other day about Leon de Grel. Leon de Grel, who was in the Waffen-SS, he's that Belgian guy who joined the Waffen-SS. There's a wonderful little video where he spoke in the 1970s, and Leon de Grel was so disgusted with Europe and the European Union and how pathetic it is. And Leon de Grel said, the European Union, they squabble over the price of tomatoes. And he's so disgusted, and he says, I fought on the right side, on Hitler's side, and we dreamed of something marvelous. I did a whole video about that, and I used that film footage. And truly, truly, you know, Alfred, at the end of the day, World War II was about the higher man versus the lower man. The higher man lost, and it was because Jews are leading all the lower men and the garbage of the world. All the communists, most of the communists are just the garbage of society led by Jews. And the higher man truly lost out in World War II. And now we are all living in the resultant hell. It's an absolute hell now. And the insanity, like you say, the sheer insanity just boggles the mind. You just can't even believe this. You can't make any of this up. And it's happening at a hellish rate, even here in South Africa. Normal whites who always tried to just live by the rules, keep to themselves, not get involved in politics, and they're just realizing, look, man, the whole fucking thing is just falling apart, man. The whole thing's just falling apart.
We're at the gates of hell right now, because we will be experiencing in very short time now from now what real hell is, and it'll seem like this, what we're experiencing right now, is just seeing the storm coming over us, but the flames aren't yet burning us, but they will. I mean, all of these top psychopathic criminals who are at the helm of every one of our countries, every one of our so-called Western civilization, is being run by the most criminal, insane, psychopathic madness, and that has to be overthrown. They are screaming for a revolution to take place by their abhorrent behavior. I mean, injecting your own population with rat poison and claiming and stealing all the money and thinking, you know, you will owe nothing and be happy. I mean, what kind of a nonsense is that? So that's the task at hand. And yeah, we'll see how this unfolds. Yeah.
This thing that, Jan, you were talking about in Brazil and Southern, taking away the children if they don't get them jabbed. So I think this has possibly already started in Canada, that if you protest about your child who has been indoctrinated to think they're in the wrong body and wants to transition, and of course this is done in schools with the help of the counselors there and hidden from the parents, but the parents find out because they find these binders, chest binders in the girl's room or whatever. This kind of thing is, what's this? And oh, you know, suddenly they find out that their child has been coached to want to change their sex. And if they protest and if they actually get too forceful in their protestations of what's going on, the children can be taken away from the parents. And this, of course, is going to be all packaged up nice to protect the children and this and that. I mean, this is extreme communism where you separate the children from the parents and put some kind of a poison thought into the children's minds that the parents are not to be trusted, the parents are the enemy, and the state will take care of you. I mean, this whole thing in schools where, oh, you don't have to tell your parents. And the same thing goes for, you know, getting the jabs and whatnot. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on in the schools. Even a number of years ago already, there were things going on in the schools where they would not have to tell the parents if, for instance, the child joined the GSA. Now, what's the GSA? That's the Gay Straight Alliance Club in the school. And all the schools had to have one of these if one single child in that school expressed some kind of a thought about, you know, that they were either homosexual or they were not sure if they were in the right body, any kind of expression of any one of these ideas. And the school was by law forced or mandated or whatever. Of course, these are just blots of toner on paper, as Alfred likes to say. But what, nevertheless, these schools, they are reliant on funding and whatnot. Their funding will be cut off if they don't comply with these mandates and rules and laws, that they had to have one of these GSAs, and the parents would have nothing to say, absolutely nothing. So I'll pass it back to you, one of you.
That is dreadful, Monica. And you know, the more I look at things, the more I say we need the patriarchy back. We need the patriarchy back the way it was. White men owning families, taking control, etc. Alfred, I was actually going through quite a bit of stuff about the biography of Dr. William Pierce, and found it very, very interesting and fascinating. And there are so many things that Pierce was saying about Jews. And the one thing that really hit me was that I think that Dr. William Pierce must be the first guy in the white right who actually realized that we need a revolution. And he's, you know, with those books that he wrote, like the Turner Diaries and Hunter and all that. I believe he consulted Revilo Oliver, who's another awesome guy that I've only just barely scrutinized. I've not even had a look at it. But absolutely, revolution is a must. It's a must. And the whole top is corrupted to hell and gone. And you know what? It's not just the top. It's not just politics, it's business and everything. Whites have been driven out of everything. If you're a racist, you're driven out of everything. So what you've actually got is that Jews have actually captured all of Western civilization in reality, using all this bogus bullshit. Yeah, yeah, Alex.
Hey, I wanted to get a couple things in here. First of all, remember that school in Southern Virginia where the white teacher was shot? Well, now another niglet down there, a fifth grader, has threatened to shoot up the school.
No.
So, yeah.
They're starting young.
So like we said, you know, you love kids, you want to teach them, you want to help the Negro. Don't learn from history. Don't waste your life trying to do what God himself couldn't, and that's give niggers 100 IQ. Your teaching is not going to elevate them. You're just going to bash your head into a wall and maybe get shot as a bonus.
You know, you know how they tried to mute us by telling us, oh, words will lead to violence and then we'll have another Holocaust, you know, with these lies all the time. Well, now, and yeah, they've all this time they've been empowering the Negroes by saying, oh, you know, you deserve restitution for all the suffering and blah, blah, blah. And white guys, the whitey is so evil. And now we are seeing how these, even the black little kiddies, get a hold of a gun and think, well, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to kill my teacher. I mean, this is, if we as the white race really are truly too stupid and too dull to get our heads out of our asses on this one, then we deserve the fate that we will be seeing, and that is our own extermination.
The Jews are firing up all these other races to destroy us, and that's why the thing you described earlier, and that was in Southern California, is a perfect example of that. I mean, where do they get these bogus ideas? They should have gratitude to whites for building the entire world, basically. Most of them wouldn't exist if it were not for white science and technology. They're using it, let alone our going over there and pouring literally trillions of dollars of welfare and philanthropy down the endless hole that is blacks, to no avail. They've tried this over and over and over, claiming it's all circumstantial, it's all nurture, but they've literally spent $1 billion. In fact, even in my area, it was over Kansas City. I'm on the other side of the state, but Kansas City, I think it was called the A.B. Sedarian Project, something like that. They poured $1 billion into a magnet school in Kansas City to give them every physical, intellectual, circumstantial advantage, and it doesn't make any difference. The smarter ones who get completely discriminated, wherever they're like South Dakota, whites up there, it's all white school, and they spend a couple thousand a year in the students versus 10,000-15,000 for blacks. It makes no difference. It hasn't had anything to do with money. All these differentials are a result of basic racial differences. Why this is hard to understand, it's not intellectually hard to understand at all. What it is that you're scared out of the obvious. You're scared. And this is what I've really come to realize about Christianity. A lot of it is just using morality to scare you out of using your eyes and your ears and even your nose, but above all, your brain, to interpret what you actually see in the world. No. Reject what you see and feel and actually experience and go with this higher morality. That is exactly the same as the Pravda in communism. So that even people who hate and oppose communism, you're doing the same thing with this Christian universalist morality. Yeah. You're denying the obvious, and it's killing you. If you're not going to see them, Alex, you're going to drown yourself. That's our message to you whites listening to this. So you got to join us. Yeah, go ahead.
Alex, this morality thing, man, it makes me so crazy. The more I look at it and I say to myself, you know, if white people across the world just functioned according to the laws of nature, just follow the laws of nature, then all our problems will disappear so quickly. And our morality is such a dreadful thing. We are creating our own enemies, making our own enemies stronger, and they come back and they kill our people. And they bring tremendous harm to our society. And one thing that you said, Alex, that really triggered me, I almost forgot to mention this. I saw a short video from Red Ice, from the guy on Red Ice, where he said the greatest transfer of wealth in history was $5 trillion in aid to Africa, and that it is 50 times as much money as Germany got at the end of World War II. And remember, Germany was flattened, absolutely flattened. Yeah. Whereas Africa, the blacks inherited everything functioning. It was functioning. And they still got $5 trillion, and they still want more.
Oh, yeah. You literally can't give them anything because they don't have the IQ to maintain it. So, you know, and if we get – now they're, of course, they're pressing for reparations at various points around the U.S. And then after reparations, it'll be just a standing black tax. But we're effectively already paying that, just not in name. Because like I said, the white man is the only net taxpayer, and he pays literally hundreds of thousands for every discolored in the nation. He is enslaved to pay for that, whereas they draw from him, and he gets abused in the media. There are so many compounded, impacted anti-white ironies that to truly realize it is close to the same thing as going insane, that reality is so opposite. As we were saying earlier, what you read in the mass media, it's come 180 degrees. It's a perfect black and white of what you read in the media. And if we are living by ourselves, we will produce heaven on earth to the extent that can be done. There's still going to be problems, of course, but we will have a new golden age that will put ancient Greece to shame if we can break free of the Jews and then deal with the rest of the problems Jews cause, because they all trace back to Jews and Jewish control. And we've absolutely demonstrated Jew control over all these areas. It's the exact same plans in every single white country out there. You see, it's globally coordinated. Now, there's one other thing we haven't touched on at all that's probably the biggest thing, or one of the biggest things that's happened in the last month, if you guys have some thoughts on it, and that is this horrible train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. There's a lot of towns in the Midwest, and Ohio's part of the Midwest, that have like European sounding names, but they're pronounced differently. I've always used the example of, we have a Milan, Missouri, but it's pronounced Milan. Well, I guess it's East. I haven't seen much video on it, but East Palestine, Ohio, this train derails. And it's hilarious. The same media and government that go absolutely insane to protect blacks who are warned about hurricanes and yet don't evacuate, or who can't run their own water system, as in Flint, Michigan, or Houston, Texas. They absolutely turn their back on this terrible ecological disaster, regardless of what caused it or whatever. I mean, it's completely messed up. And they just go, yeah, that's nothing. Just deal with it. It's one of the unfunniest, funniest things I've ever seen. I mean, have you all been following that at all?
Alex?
Yes, yes.
One of my supporters in America actually told me about it because he lives close to it, and they're very worried about those chemicals.
But like there, what was it, 50 boxcars derailed, and 10 of them had very it's turned into vinyl chloride or something. It's in the air, acid rain, and it's killed a lot of their animals around there. And the people are feeling, oh, no, that doesn't qualify for federal disaster.
Probably because it's white.
Are you kidding me?
It is.
Yeah,
it's largely white. It's farmers. It's wonderfully productive land. This, I don't know. It seems like this is the part of the instructions to kill every animal and beast and blade of grass, you know, that they want to do for Amalek, right? So, and I think it's pretty clear that it was a created event, that this wasn't just an accident, quote unquote, an accident. No, I think that's my opinion. I haven't really delved that deeply into it, but it just seems like the signs are there. And then, of course, the reaction, you know, to just, oh, well, that's not an emergency. We'll just turn our backs. Yeah.
But literally yesterday, from when we're recording this on the 23rd, Trump went there and passed out a bunch of stuff. And yeah, this is a big Trump voting area. As Monica was saying, it's a big red state, as they're saying, or a red state area, red area within the state. And most of these are, you know, 95% rural, and they'd be right wing conservative types. And then they'll have a couple cities that are absolutely nigger nasty, and Ohio and Missouri and Maryland, all these states are like that. It's just astonishing the lack of coverage, even knowing the politics that that Biden hasn't gone there. This ridiculous faggot who's from Indiana, South Bend, Pete Buttigieg, hasn't gone there or done anything about it. And we just are having, I don't know, I'm still sussing out the patterns, but there's been a lot more derailings. And there's apparently some new, I read about this in the Daily Rake, they were talking about, there's some new train thing where they're basically, he's saying due to Wall Street, to make more money, they're trying to make these trains on some theory that I can't even give you the name of, but it's some three-word deal. They're trying to get the trains essentially way, way, way too big, and it's probably what's producing a lot of the derailments, whereas around the world in other places, you don't have maybe even one derailment a year. Here we're having like 1,000 over the last couple of years. I may have that wrong, but lots of derailments. We're having all kinds of manufacturing and agricultural processing stuff burning down, and you start feeling, it's just like all these people dying suddenly. It's like, was this happening before and I just wasn't paying over much attention? It just seems like there's so much more and more.
I think there's sabotage going on. I think that they got it in their manuals. The Antifa got it in their manuals, how to derail trains. I mean, this is part of their, you know, their training manuals.
We know Antifa has done that a couple of times out in the Northwest, yeah. And we've seen some other, not necessarily political attacks on substations of power companies. There was another story in the Justice Report, which I think, again, is out of Canada, but does actual firsthand reporting about some guy with like Kaltenbach or something like that, some German name, who was just short of completing boot camp to be a Marine, and he was kicked out because he had once known someone who is somehow associated with white nationalism. And so they're doing extreme vetting of the military, and they wanted to pay him $250,000, he said, to stay in and infiltrate all the various white groups the way they always do. So there's absolutely a first top incentive to create white terrorists in name or in reality in order to justify the unending claims of criminal Biden and the Jewish administration, the permocracy, that whites are the real terrorists and the real threat to our nation. So you got to be doubly aware out there. Meanwhile, the infrastructure is falling apart and Biden's flying over to Ukraine. They've already killed about a couple hundred thousand and they've already spent a couple hundred billion almost in Ukraine getting whites killed in order to try to, you know, extend the reign of Jewish control and all the sexual misery and the transsexuality and the rest of the garbage that goes with it. And Russia at least is fighting back. That's actually the one good thing. And Russia itself is far from perfect because it has all kinds of anti-speech and effectively anti-white laws in the name of fighting Nazis. But at least it's resisting on the front of protecting the family from sexual perversion. And right now, that's about all we got going for us that has any actual real world political power. But I just wanted to talk about the East Palestine thing a little bit because that's one of the biggest things that's happened in the last month. And my God, because it's in Trump territory, they won't even report it. They don't give a damn though if all the soil is poisoned and whatever. And any objective science you want to use or other places they boarded up because it was poisoned. Oh, here. Oh, no. They're in there a couple days later. Oh, you can drink the water and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely unbelievable. But
yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. This is huge. This is, I would say, okay, we've all acknowledged it, and probably most of the listeners know we are in a war. And you could say this is the hot phase. You know, we're going into a very hot phase where they're actual. I mean, what happens in wars? They take out bridges, they take out railroads, they take, you know, that's what happens. So it's done in such a covert way, though. Excuse me.
The poisoning of the water and the food and acquiring all the land, Bill Gates buying up the land, Chinese coming in and allowed to buy the land, and just
this is the final push. I mean, this war started over 100 years ago when the Jews figured out with three world wars they can ascend the throne of world rule. And each one did have its intention. Like the first one was used to start what we call the second one. And since then, it's like Sefton Delmer said, we won this war. That was in 1945 with black propaganda, but this has only just begun. We will continue to ramp this up until there's not a single good word to be spoken about the Germans. Well, then they just expanded that divide and conquer the white race by annihilating the Germans. They expanded that until there is not a good word to be said against about any white person, and have all the other races pile up on the whites, and then the Jew can ascend the throne of world rule. But that is a mirage that they will never be able to ascend, because they can destroy, but they cannot build. And as they try to poison and steal everything, it's falling apart.
For a bit of a good news, I mean, they had their man in Yeltsin, and they stole everything they could. And Putin, let me encourage you, and I print these in Kirksville today. I do a daily digest. I print the full text of Putin addresses, his major addresses, and he sounds like a rational, serious adult, and he basically says, you know, we average Russians have no sympathy at all for all the assets seized in the West, even though that was outright theft. These are people who themselves largely got it from fire sale prices inside the country. And he doesn't use the term Jews, but he means these Jew oligarchs stole all that stuff in the first place. And he said, you know, you serious businessmen need to come home to Russia. We're going to build an autarky here, and that'll be the upside of the sanctions, is we're going to be autarky, basically means completely self-sufficient. They deal with China. Now, the Jews were trying to sell off all our manufacturing in the USA and North America to China to make more money and to gain political control. But apparently a lot of people think the Chinese have got away from them. They're not under Jew control. So these are good signs. Russia is going to win that war. And then who knows what the neocons are going to resort to. They're going to be extremely angry. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull off some kind of nuke job or not, but Russia's winning that. And that is at least good for whites. So the fact that Jews used to have 100% control of the Soviet Union and they now no longer do is probably the most hopeful sign I can give you from the last 100 years that they are not invincible. We can beat them, but we need to come together as a team and recognize that, look, we are racially comparatively more individualistic and meritocratic than other races. And among ourselves, that's fine. That's our way. That's how we are. But when other races exist among us, they are going to naturally form a team and defeat us operating as individuals. And that explains how we got to where we are now. So we need to use our Aryan intellect to overcome, to perceive this problem that I just outlined and overcome it by saying, no, we have to have an all-white nation. Only in that can we truly racially be safe to flourish and develop all these arts and sciences that have amazed and really put the world on a much higher level than it would be otherwise. And Alex, that's really all this is all about.
Alex, what we've done for the world, if it wasn't for us, probably nothing, no progress would probably have ever taken place. People in across the world would still be living in huts, et cetera, et cetera, if that even. But
no doubt about it, certainly in Africa.
I've got something funny for you. I spotted a lovely quote from Hitler in Hitler's table talk. Hitler was talking about his banker. I don't know how you pronounce his name, Schacht or Schacht.
Schacht.
Schacht, okay. Well, Alex.
Hjalmar Schacht, I believe.
He was talking about him, and Hitler was quite paranoid when he was talking about his banker, and he was saying that, you know, he's not quite sure if his banker is outwitting him, and he's like really on his toes when dealing with his banker. And then Hitler makes the remark that this is proof that a good Aryan can outwit a Jew, can outswindle a Jew anytime. I thought that was quite funny.
I'll just say something here about, and it kind of ties into something that Alex, that you said earlier, and it flew by pretty quick, but I just, yeah, literally they owe their existence to us. And I think you were talking about infrastructure and whatnot, which is really fine and good. But you know what? Many Africans or Black people actually literally owe their existence to us because we have brought them all kinds of means to stay alive, like sanitation or medicine or just, you know, how to stay alive. And,
yeah,
and then they've been able to multiply much, much more than if they had been just left to their own devices. Now, they do have a high fecundity rate, like a high birth rate compared to white people or compared to Asiatic people. And their you know, their sex drive, it starts younger. They have more children and whatnot. And that's because they, in a natural state, without the assistance and help of white people, they also die a lot at higher rates at a young age. Like, you know, many children won't survive. They don't actually take as much care of their children as we tend to take care of our children and whatnot. And there's all kinds of reasons why they would die at a higher rate. And so they have a higher birth rate. And so literally we have, they do literally owe their existence to us, many of them, right? So their populations have grown like crazy because of our help. And so that statement you made, I think, you know, referring more to infrastructure and helping them out, but it is in such a literal sense. So really when they're...
Well, yeah, it's Norman Borlaug is the guy. His like, I think it was some kind of agricultural wheat technology is basically the reason that when we first encountered them, there were maybe 100 million Africans, and now they grew to like 600-800 million over 100 years because of our technology. But Norman Borlaug was the Borlaug is a Midwestern Scandinavian guy from the USA. He's the reason for them having wheat to literally be alive, let alone the medicine and stuff. It would come after that, and then the infrastructure. Absolutely, 100%. But again, we understand this. They don't have the intellect to even understand their position in the world. They are exactly like, you know, goldfish in a bowl. They don't know from the bowl or from the river or whatever. They have no idea. They're our pets, essentially.
Alex, if you have to see how little knowledge they have, even about their own stuff, you think whites can be stupid? You have no idea what these people
do. I actually wanted to make a point on what you said earlier. I forget what the technical term for this is, but blacks have some verbal ability to where they are able to sound more or less like whites. They're not as inferior to us in that regard as they are in others, but this is used to cover up that they don't actually understand a lot of the stuff they're talking about. They're using words more imitatively or performatively, as we now say, but they don't understand the stuff underneath it. That's why they can't ever come through in it. So they may stand up front and give a good corporate presentation that sounds like they kind of know what they're talking about, but they basically don't.
Also, I'll just point out that one of the racial differences between the blacks and the white race is if you put their intelligence or other characteristics on a bell curve, they have a very wide, broad bell curve. So in other words, they have people at the extremes, whereas our bell curve is a little bit steeper. And then the bell curve of the Orientals or the Chinese, Japanese, they have a very narrow bell curve. This is just proven, fact that their bell curves, they are, in other words, they are more uniform in their characteristics,
The Chinese whereas, are like, the Asians are more like women, and they're more grouped around a middle IQ. The white males,
well, that, it hasn't, it, it actually, one. Yeah, Alex, it,
we have the higher and the lower.
It's not to do with what these characteristics are. It has to do with the variation of the characteristics. That's what I'm talking about. So the black people have the greatest variation. Their average is going to be lower, for example, in the IQ, much lower than the white people or the Oriental people, but their bell curve is shallower. In other words, really wide. So they do have some really smart people. And then, of course, at the other end, some extremely, you could say, mentally retarded.
They have very few very high end people.
They have very few, but they have some. But these people will be promoted in all the positions, and they will be shown to us in the mass media. This is what I'm talking about. So it will look like, wow, they're just like us. Whereas, in fact, those are the ones who are really pushed into these positions for us to see. That's what my point was.
Most of it's in fiction anyway, where they'll just for literally decades they'll only show judges like black females, and blacks are in any position where they can like talk down to be the moral judge of whites. They're always going to promote that in the media. 90% fiction and then sometimes in reality.
I have the view that virtually all black success is probably faked. That if it wasn't for Jews and liberals and so forth, and all kinds of assistance, they wouldn't even succeed at anything. It would be about one person in 100 or one in 1,000.
In the USA, it's all a function of government policy. It's all like 8A subcontracting, where they have a black face. Actual work is done by whites, but for political reasons, they have to have a black in the board. Those people all attained a middle class or even wealthy status, and they're all clustered around D.C. And all that money is stolen from whites who are enslaved in the hinterlands, in the middle of the country. And then even for the real work, these black-owned firms, so it looks good on paper, like, oh, blacks are a large part of the economy. No, they're just fronting for the slick, shrewd ones are just putting their black name on the board, so it looks like it's a minority-owned corporation. This kind of stuff goes on all over the place. But they're not doing anything legitimately. Maybe we had the notion of the talented 10th. That's the one 10th that can more or less act like whites and more or less have an IQ like whites. And plenty of them are capable of doing honest work or doing legitimate stuff. But the problem is, the other 90% are not. So
I should.
Exactly. Now,
we just pretend that 90% doesn't exist and the 10% is all that does exist. And that's how it's treated in fiction, and it's called higher morality if you don't believe anything else. You're immoral.
Have to look at, did they ever invent the wheel? No, they didn't invent the wheel in all of Africa, right, until white people came along and showed them. They also didn't have a two-story building at all. Like it was mud and grass.
It was all some Arabs or some whites in northern Africa. It wasn't blacks developing anything there.
Dead right, Alex, dead right. If I may just say one other thing about blacks that I've noticed is that if you leave blacks to themselves to run their own society and to make their own decisions, you'd be amazed at how dysfunctional they are as a group. So you not only have like a low IQ, but if you had to leave them to just face the nastiness of life, you'd be amazed at how even more chaotic they can become. Because I just want to explain something to you guys, that especially you European, let's call it like the German types, you won't even think of this, is if you actually like study our wars that we've had in Europe, are nasty, nasty wars. You know, we can really beat up on each other in a nasty way. So we go and we smash each other's societies ruthlessly. Now, when you study our wars, you'll see that our people under stress, Germans under stress, French under stress, etc., that people can adapt very quickly to life-threatening situations and stress, real life and death situations, and still make plans and quickly think up solutions and carry on like that. That is how we fight our brutal wars against each other. But if you actually look at blacks, and when blacks are under stress, I want to tell you guys that black people in Africa have never in their existence, virtually never in their existence, except for one occasion that I can think of, have never in their existence lived under the kind of stress levels that ancient Greeks, ancient Romans, German tribes, modern Germans, you know, whites have lived through levels of stress that blacks don't know. They don't know this. There's only one instance that I know of, and I want to actually do a video with another guy. There's another guy that I'm working with. He wants to do some stuff about Africa to teach American children. And I want to go and we'll look at it, the biggest genocide in South Africa. That is about the only time that blacks actually know what hardship is. These people have never faced the kind of problems that the Celts or the Gauls or the Romans or any of our people have faced in the past. And you know, another thing, when we have fought each other, we really beat up on each other in a nasty way. We are nasty to each other. If we used that kind of ruthless violence that we've used against each other, if we had to use that against blacks or Jews or other races, I must tell you, you'd be shocked at the results. Maybe only the Japanese have experienced that kind of stuff, but the Japanese are high IQ Asians. But I must tell you, these blacks, if you have to put them into a real spot, I'm telling you that they wouldn't know their ass from their elbow. And from some of the stuff I've seen, they'd probably start killing each other, running over each other. They would not even reach out to help each other. These people are more dysfunctional as a group than you can believe. That is why in Africa, for example, the blacks can outnumber the whites 5-1, 10-1, and still the blacks would not actually be able to smash the white. That is why such small populations of whites controlled all of Africa. I mean, Africa at its peak of colonialism, I don't think that there were more than, probably never more than 7 million whites ran the whole of Africa, probably. And the vast majority of them lived in South Africa. The rest of Africa was run by like 10,000 whites here, 20,000 whites over there, etc.
You know, that is why understanding what has happened to us and understanding our true history is absolutely key to getting this resolved, because then these characteristics that you just talked about, our superior characteristics, will come to the fore, and no other race has a chance against us when we understand, we, the white race, understands how we have been abused and deceived.
And let's just remember who it is who has done this to us, and through all kinds of means and methods, and right, you know, the psychological warfare has been a huge component of this, and that is international organized Jewry, the Jews in general, and so this is, yeah, the awareness we are trying to build among our people, that is really what will save us, and that we understand this, like you say, Alfred, that we understand what has been done to us, that is key to being able to come out of this and to thrive once again. And I know that for myself, I do need to finish up fairly soon. I know we've been going for a couple of hours, I think, but
we get four people on here. You listening, man, that time is like pie. Pizza. Everybody wants to grab as much as they can. It's just the natural way of things. And that's good, because we have stuff to tell you that you need to hear. Right? That's why we're doing the show.
I think it's been great conversation today, and lots of, back and forth. Everybody's had some great things to say. I've enjoyed it very, very much. I can't believe how fast these 2 hours have gone by. So yeah, thank you very much, Alex. For having this show, and Jan for doing the production end of it. That's just great.
It. Yeah.
Thanks very much, everyone. I have one final thing I want to add to.
Yeah, I was going to say, does anybody else have any other points? I want to get out these pallets. Okay. I don't have any other shopping agenda here, so to speak. I can't think of anything else that's stuck out in the last month that we haven't touched on that's super important.
Okay, my final words to you guys is Ben Klassen, the creator of the Church of Creativity, which I love. Ben Klassen is a total believer in white unity worldwide, etc. Ben Klassen said, if the white race stood together, we would be 10 times as strong as everybody else. And I want to tell you, that is not even an exaggeration. We would probably be 20 times as strong as everybody else put together.
And yes, that is a wonderful closing word. Alfred, do you have any last thoughts? I really don't myself so much, but.
We should have listened to the great industrialist Henry Ford. And when he wrote about the international Jew, he saw all this coming. And that's
the world's foremost problem. He called it exactly 100 years ago.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
And my God, it's only metastasized now.
Yes.
So listen to your Aryan greats when they were less scared than today. And yeah, we've got to come together as a team and do something about the Jews who are murdering our individuals, our cities, our neighborhoods, our states, and our entire race. So thank you all for listening today, and I hope we've given you some good stuff, and I know we have, and we'll be back again to do it again next month.
These are Alex Linder's websites, www.alexlinder.com, pieville.net, that's his Twitter type of website, www.vnnforum.com. You'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com. These are my websites: historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.